I didn't go on vacation. I went to Washington. It was work. But I took the weekend off. And
thank you. For our pledge tonight, we have Chief DeRohan. This is his last official City Council meeting. He's retiring, so he's going to lead us in the pledge and then say a few remarks about his career with Morro Bay. John?
Thank you. Will you all place your hand over your heart and repeat after me? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you, Mayor Peters and Council, and fellow department heads, fellow brothers and sisters of the Morro Bay Police Department, city staff, members, and citizens of Morro Bay. This is my last council meeting as your police chief before my retirement next week. I'm not here tonight to advise you how to govern or how to spend your money or how to complain. I'm here with a very special group of people, my wife, Robin, and my son, Colin, my other son, Robert. I had a prior commitment and bong and a beard and worked vice and narcotics for a couple years. I was fortunate to work as a school resource officer for 3 years in over 20 schools. And I was also had the tough duty of working the beach team, driving ATVs up and down the beach. I've seen people at their worst, but also the smiles on a parent's face after I was able to breathe life into their unresponsive infant. I've worked long hour days and nights to protect all of you, and I wouldn't trade the experience for anything. I've had more pleasure working for this city than I can even begin to say. I've bragged about our city and our police department in all my travels and everywhere that I've been. I've worked with great professionals throughout the city government who really care about this city that you are all so fortunate to have, including none other than Andrea Luker, our city manager. And although he's not here, I won't forget former Chief Joe Lovin, who encouraged me to apply here and supported me and getting me hired as your 6th police chief. And I'm very proud of the accomplishments that our department has done since I've been chief, including an overall 24% reduction in crime. And I have to tell you how fortunate that you are to have the best and most dedicated police employees anywhere in the business, and also a group of volunteers that are just unbelievable. And you won't find any better in any other police department or city around here. To do what they've done with the limited resources that we have had is absolutely amazing, and how they've maintained a positive attitude and gone out and done their job and have done it well truly has amazed me my entire career here. And I'm so proud and privileged to have served with this great bunch over the past 8 years. And Tim Olivas is no exception. I was fortunate to hire him as my commander when I became chief and help mentor him to be your next police chief. And it's such a great feeling to leave such a great police department in the hands of one of our own. And I know he will do an excellent job. And this is my last public appearance in this uniform. I'm very proud of this uniform and what it stands for. It represents an organization that truly cares about the future of Morro Bay. It represents men and women working together for all that is good. And it's only appropriate that I wear this uniform this last time, here in the heart of our governmental process, a city council meeting. My family and I will miss you, Morro Bay, and we will miss all of our friends. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you. The ride was magnificent. God bless each of you and the future of Morro Bay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. join. Have your family come join you up there, John. I'd like to give the council a chance to say any remarks in response, so if you would stay there for a moment, please. I just wanted to say we saw the pictures of you throughout your career, and I have to say the only thing that's changed about your looks is your mustache has turned white.
So imagine that.
But I was here when you were hired, and I just thank you for all your hard work for our city. We really have appreciated you. I know your family is going to appreciate having you around a little bit more, so thank you.
Thank you.
Rick?
I wasn't really prepared to say anything, but I'll try. It was big shoes to fill when Joe left. Joe was a real great chief, and you came on board, and we really didn't skip a beat. And you have led this department through the toughest of budget times this city's ever seen, and done it very even-handedly and very well. And we appreciate you and the entire police department and all the people that work for it there, and the volunteers. Like you say, they're a great together bunch, and you've helped foster that and help, you know, bring along the Citizens Academy and facilitated that process and got us some new people on board. And you keep things going on a shoestring budget, and we're going to miss you very much.
Ready?
Thank you.
Anything you want to add?
Yes. I think my memory is going to be when we sat down in your office and worked over the vehicle code, how we kind of came together and we just walked through that thing together. And I really appreciate the...
Okay, we've got special recognition for these two people, and I asked John, rather than read the verbose wording on these proclamations, I asked John to explain what happened, and then we'll give you the certificates. Okay.
On January 5th of this year, Morro Bay Police Department were summoned to the Chase Bank for a possible suspect that was involved in some fraud and trying to fraudulently obtain some funds with a bad credit card. And Corinne was an employee of the bank, former dispatcher with our department, so I think some of that rubbed off on her. And it's just like that seventh sense that you learn something didn't look right. And she remembered a security bulletin from her bank and recognized the suspect's name and the method of operation. And so she actually took the time to delay the suspect to notify the police department and followed the suspect out of the bank and watched the suspect get in a car. And Ken Vesterfeldt was right across the street and always carries his volunteer portable police radio with him. And so Corinne informed Ken of what just happened and, hey, those are the suspects, and they're driving away in that car. And Ken got on the police radio and radioed it in with an excellent description. Officers were available and close by. They stopped the suspect vehicle and ultimately arrested several suspects which were inside the vehicle. And it turns out that this was a big ring of fraud that was happening all over the county and other areas. And so because of their actions, we were able to stop suspects from furthering their criminal activities. And what they did was just an outstanding job, and it's a fine example of citizens in our city getting involved and reporting what they did. And I'll let the mayor read the rest of the proclamation.
So this is a resolution of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay commending Corinne Black. And I'm just going to read the final. Therefore, be it resolved by the City Council of the City of Morro Bay, California, that you are to be commended for a job well done and helping bring a string of crimes to a successful close. You are an exemplary member of this community. Same words for Ken. Thank you very much, Ken. come up here, if I could ask Dr. Michael Roof, if you would come forward, please. Hi. This one is a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you want to introduce this with you?
Yes. Our board president, Gary Nemeth, is with me.
Please come forward. This is a proclamation about Autism Awareness Month. Whereas autism is a complex neurobiological disorder that typically lasts throughout a person's lifetime, it is part of a group of disorders known as autism spectrum disorders, ASDs. ASDs are the fastest growing serious developmental disability. Many are not adequately informed about ASDs, and individuals with ASDs and their families face tremendous and overwhelming challenges. They are valuable and talented citizens, and the Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center will celebrate Autism Awareness Month in 2010. Therefore, be it resolved that the Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center, in cooperation with the City of Morro Bay, declares April 2010 as Autism Awareness Month. And I'll let you add any further comments that you have. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us. For anyone out there who would like to learn more about autism, I just wanted to let you know that on the 25th of April, there will be a walk for autism in San Luis Obispo, in and around the mission area, starting at 12 and ending at 4. We at the Autism Spectrum Center are involved in raising awareness and providing support to families touched by autism, and some of those live right here in your own community of Morro Bay. I'm a Los Osoan, and we have citizens there with autism. We have citizens here in Morro Bay, and we're all about raising awareness. We're all about providing those families with support. Gary?
Thank you. It's poignant following your chief. I retired with 30 years in law enforcement from a different city, San Luis Obispo. And it's one thing to have an active career in law enforcement one day, and then the next day you retired. So congratulations on your 31 years in law enforcement, and I'm sure you have something time out to recognize us here in Morro Bay with the proclamation. And it's really getting the awareness of everybody out there to say autism disability really is something that strikes a lot of people in your community, and that's why we're here gathering the proclamations, to really bring the awareness of everybody. And congratulations to you, Chief, for your career. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And our next announcement this evening is our business of the week, is Fitness Works, and we have Ginger Machado here to tell us about that.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, council members and citizens. I'm Ginger Machado. I've been living in Morro Bay with my family for the past 11 years, and I want to continue along the vein of the Chamber of Commerce encouraging citizens to shop locally and maintain their healthy lifestyle, as many of us set for our New Year's resolution. Fitness Works is very proud to be offering specials this month with enrollment special as well as first month for free. So come on in, with limitations, of course, but we'd love to see. I can recognize many of our current members here in the faces I'm looking at, and invite people in. We also, our sister business is Therapy Works, physical therapy in Morro Bay, your premier facility. So come on by. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right, moving on to our announcements. First, I want to let everyone know on our agenda, items D1, D6, and D8 have been pulled, if any of you were here for those. And our announcements. First of all, this is courtesy of Hank Roth telling us this. He got some concerns about an American Community Survey, and so he sent this email saying that the American Community Survey is a legitimate survey conducted in every county in the United States. It's in regard to the Census Bureau, and they only divulge that they work for the Census Bureau, and it's address-based. So it conducts several ongoing surveys every month, as well as occasional one-time surveys. Anytime law enforcement or anyone in the community has concerns regarding an ongoing survey, please direct them to their office. And I'm going to direct you to Hank, because I didn't get the email address of their office on here. But anyway, it is a legitimate thing. You have to be very careful during a census year because there are some people out there that are not legitimate. This particular one, this American Community Survey, is legitimate. But you can certainly still check with Hank and make sure that that's okay. SLOCOG, we got some good news and bad news stuff. First of all, the transportation development funds are going to be a little bit lower than we thought. However, the state transit assistance funds are a little bit higher, and consequently, SLOCOG is going to be funding us the $24,000 that we were short on our dial-a-ride costs this year. So that's something to be very grateful for. We thought it might happen. It did, so I'm really glad of that. We are meeting, Janine Burlingame and I met on a subcommittee with the RTA, and we're working on our dial-a-ride situation. We're working on the possibility of one fixed-route bus and one dial-a-ride vehicle, and we may be sharing that with Los Osos. So we'd have dial-a-ride in Morro Bay on Monday and Wednesday, Tuesday, Thursday in Los Osos, and Friday, first come, first serve from either community. So that's kind of one of the things we're working on as a way to keep some dial-a-ride service, because we all know how important that is. Other transportation advantages that you can take advantage of. The summer break pass is coming up soon. It allows students K through 12 to travel on any bus in the county Memorial Day through Labor Day for only $30. And there's also Rideshare has a ride match system. It's kind of like Match.com. You can match your ride with someone else who needs to go the same place as you do. And it's a safe, secure, convenient way to find matches. It's done on the Internet. And you can get that at www.irideshare.org. And so you can match yourself up with someone else with the same transportation needs. There's also Google Transit, and that's providing a regional online bus trip planner. So if you do want to take the bus anywhere, you can go to Google Transit and figure out your schedule and the cost and everything else. So lots of things happening electronically with transportation, and we're hoping we'll keep our dial-a-ride going too. I think that's it for mine. Betty, any announcements?
Yes, the Water Resources Advisory Committee met this past week. We spent all morning in workshop working on a plan where we resource management study, where we see what each community is, where they are with their rates, their water quality and the water quantity, as well as streets and roads, schools that we don't really focus on, mostly the water side of that. And that should be coming out late summer, I think, for all to see. And as a community within the county, it involves the whole county, including its cities. The other probably significant thing that was announced at the meeting on Wednesday was that our reservoirs are maintaining. Even though we've had a lot of rain, there was 3 years to make up for. So we're at the same level that we were last year, which is two-thirds, rather than the one-half that we were a month ago.
Okay, right.
This Saturday is our Rock to Pier run, and Joe, I think they need to call you to sign up, right? Go ahead.
No, this Saturday is the Miracle Miles.
The Miracle Mile, I mean.
Yeah,
but it's from the Rock to the Pier.
It is from the Morro Bay Rock to the Pier.
Right.
Yes.
And we'll be doing that. I think judging by how we did last year, I'm going to be pulling up Sunday morning sometime at the pier. The Morro Bay Rotary Club is celebrating its 60th anniversary this Saturday. Just wanted to put that out. They're going to have their big dinner at the inn at Morro Bay. And also, the Blessing of the Fleet is going to be at 12:30 this Sunday at the North T Pier, where all the clergy from Morro Bay get together. And it's really a fun thing if you've never been there. So that'll be 12:30 at the North T Pier, and that's followed by the Fisherman's Barbecue right here in this building. And then October 25th, I'm going to have a little support rally. Actually, I shouldn't say little because it would be really embarrassing and humiliating if it's too little. But so show up, if you can, at Tognazzini's Dockside, October 25th from 11 to 1.
April.
Thanks.
April.
April. What did I say? Oh, geez, April 25th. Don't come in October.
It's tough running a campaign and still working. Okay, no.
Probably have another one in October.
All right, thank you. I just wanted to start by inviting everyone to participate this week or this Wednesday. We have our first community workshop for the Downtown Enhancement Project, which is an extension of the Council and Planning Commission subcommittee working with the Cal Poly Civic and Regional Planning Department. And this this project is going to be focused on our downtown. And basically, it starts at 5 o'clock at the community center this Wednesday. We'll start with a tour, a walking stroll of the downtown area, and participants will get a camera that they can take pictures of things that they like in the downtown area, and then they'll have another camera to take pictures of things that they'd like to see improved or adjusted, we'll say. That tour, walking tour, starts at 5 o'clock. It'll be facilitated and led by the Cal Poly students as well as our subcommittee. At 6 o'clock, we'll end up back at the community center for some refreshments that have been donated by local downtown businesses, and that includes drinks, snacks, everything we need to recover from our hike. And we'll follow that with some activities facilitated by the Cal Poly Civic and Regional Planning Department focused on visioning and exploring what our ideal downtown looks like and what our future could be. So it will be very interactive. The results of the input that we receive at these workshops is going to help steer the project that Cal Poly is going to be developing and eventually presenting to the Planning Commission on June 7th at the Planning Commission meeting. So it's really important that you come out. We want to hear your input, your ideas about the downtown, your aspirations, and make sure that there's a good amount of public comment and feedback. And it's going to be very free flow, and most likely for these workshops we'll be breaking out into smaller groups so we can get creative and people can be heard. There will be a follow-up community workshop the two Wednesdays from the 14th, this Wednesday, on the 28th, and that will start at 6 o'clock. And what it'll involve is a presentation and check-in from the Cal Poly group talking about what they heard at our Wednesday workshop coming up and clarifying any questions or misconceptions that may have come out of that workshop, and then going forward and focusing more on some of the things that the participants of the 28th workshop are interested in talking about and getting more detail in. So the two dates, this Wednesday, 5 o'clock at the community center, we'll take the walk, end up back at the community center at 6 o'clock. You can show up for the walk and attend the workshop, or just do the workshop, or either, or it doesn't matter. And then on the 28th, we'll do the second workshop. So I hope you can make that, and I would like to say a thank you to the Whale's Tail, Top Dog, and Morro Bay Mud Fudge for donating the refreshments and snacks for in between. And then also I would like to recognize the businesses that supported our Adopt a Tree planting effort that happens about a week ago. We had the Citizens Tree Committee out planting with Gardens by Gabriel and Newton's Cultivation. We put about 13 trees in the ground, street trees. And the businesses so far that have committed to adopting and watering their trees in the downtown area include Beads by the Bay, Chase Bank, Econo Lodge, TKD Surf Shop, and the Beach Bungalows. The Solu family actually is going to do the plaque and dedicate their trees to the Grandma Solu. So it was a lot of fun, and if anyone's interested, there are other trees available for adoption and vacant wells that we plan on replanting as well. The number there is 462-7398 if you'd like to get more information about what the adoption entails and the opportunity there. My last item is just a check-in and an update to the community about the Air Pollution Control District and the South County Particulate Study that our district board that I'm a representative for the city on. We met last month. That was March 24th. And we had a five-hour hearing because there was quite an amount of public comments. We had a presentation of the findings of the Phase 2 particulate study that presents a direct correlation to the air pollution on the Mesa and the off-road riding on the dunes. With the public comment, we transitioned into board discussion, and the board eventually voted 9-1 to accept the findings of the study. And our action was to direct the staff to evaluate what our actual responsibility is and powers within the state park, and how we can actually influence any sort of mitigation for the air pollution which we're required to address. And then also we requested that the board follow up, because there were some specific questions and concerns that were submitted to us from the Parks and Rec Department, or state parks, and a few other groups. So our next meeting will be basically a check-in from our staff, and that's going to be held May 19th at 9 o'clock. And instead of being at the Board of Supervisors chambers, we're going to be at the City of San Luis Obispo chambers. So the APCD board and staff, we by law are required to get to the bottom of the air pollution, but it remains to be determined what the best route for that is, and we're going to be very careful and focused on making sure that we do the best job possible to address that. If you would like to read the study, it's still available at the APCD website, and that's slocleanair.org.
Okay. Carla?
I'd just like to remind the community that we have the city has openings on three of the advisory boards, and I would encourage anyone interested in serving on those to see the city clerk for more information on it.
Which ones are they?
The bid, so promotions. You would have to be a hotelier, Major Q, and I believe Parks and Rec also has one. Is that correct? Thank you. Those okay. Three boards.
Is there a deadline on that, Bridget? That is.
There is two on the TBID board. The deadline is the 30th.
Okay, so we got
with
time.
Interviews on May 10th.
Okay. All right. Next, we have our staff reports. Could I ask you all to make them real brief, because we're running late already? Okay, Harbor.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council. I did represent the city at the California Marine Affairs and Navigation's annual conference, or Washington Week, in Washington again this year. The trip was fully funded and paid for by the Central Coast Joint Cable Fisheries Liaison Committee. Lots of meetings as usual, but one thing of note, while we were there, the House Subcommittee on Oceans and Wildlife that Ms. Capps sits on was formulating a hearing on community perspective on cat shares on April 22nd, and we were asked to suggest some names, and last week we heard that local fisherman Wayne Moody, who owns the vessel Capriccio at Tidelands Park, has been selected to testify. One of five people, one from Seattle, three from the East Coast, and one from Little Morro Bay, so that's very nice. Unfortunately, it's a lot of work, too. Wayne will be the level of presentation at the Subcommittee, as there's written testimony and then oral testimony and then questions, so he's prepping right now for that presentation. Salmon season did open up a week ago Saturday, recreational's first recreational salmon season in 3 years, and unfortunately the fishing was a little slow. Weather has not been good. We're all hoping it picks up, but it's great to have a salmon season again. Finally, the Army Corps of Engineers contract. Many of you may have seen the large scow that arrived in town last Friday and parked off the South T Pier. The Army Corps of Engineers dredging contractor is just about to commence an eelgrass mitigation project. This will be using different equipment again, and there'll be a fair amount of activity, we hope, by later this week, where they'll be out working for about a month on the east side of the sand spit to contour an area to prepare it for planting eelgrass. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Recreation and Parks, Joe.
Thank you and good evening. Today is the opening day for futsal and also t-ball. And if you have anybody has youngsters who still want to play t-ball coach pitch, we still have openings. So come on up to the Recreation and Parks Department and sign up. We'll be celebrating Arbor Day at Del Mar Park with the tree committee. That'll be April the 30th. If you're interested in participating, either contact our department or Councilman Smuckler. The 17th, which is this Saturday, Youth Services will be having a booth out at the Rock. To help celebrate the Miracle Miles and fundraising for their program, and also promoting our program at that event. A week later, Youth Services will be having a float down the kite parade down the Marbury Boulevard, and we'll be also having a booth out at the Kite Festival, which is down at the Rock along the beach. And Earth Day will be celebrated on April the 22nd, and we'll be doing some recycling and reusing and reducing information through our Kids Club program. Thank you.
Thank you. And Public Services, Mr. Leibach.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The city is back on to state water, so that means we're using chloramines for disinfection rather than free chlorine. And the King's tank maintenance work is complete, so the King's tank is back in operation for this year. Just want to remind everybody to go to the city's website and sign up for the Notify Me module if you're interested in receiving automatic notification for the city's various boards and commissions, including PWAB, Planning Commission, and the JPA information. There'll be a item on this next Public Works Advisory Board, PWAB, on April 21st, 6 p.m. at the Vets Hall regarding transit service changes. And one last item. We're working on our greenhouse gas inventories, and a kickoff meeting will be held on Thursday to start that back up again. And we'll be working with the other small cities in the county to apply for a grant to fund that process. Thank you.
Noah, you had a comment.
Yeah, I just wanted to give a public thanks to Mr. Livick for coming out when we were planting trees. He kept an eye on us, made sure we were behaving ourselves out there, and really appreciated you doing that on a Saturday.
Okay, then our closed session report. Mr. Schultz.
Yes, good evening. Council met in closed session prior to this regular session to discuss two items. The two items discussed were real property transactions and personnel issues. As to both these items, no action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
All right. And with that, we open our public comment. Please come forward.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, council members, city staff, residents of Morro Bay. I'm Peter Candela, Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce. And first, I would like to say thank you to Chief Durohan for all his dedication and involvement with the chamber, and you'll be missed. We do appreciate everything that you've done. Sometimes these events are very involved and with hopefully a lot of people coming into town, and the involvement by the police department, certainly with Chief Durohan and Tim Olivas, and certainly the volunteers, have made our job a little easier. And thank you very much. Two other things. One, that every year every other year now, we do a candidates debate or a candidates forum. It's generally held here. This year we're going to partnership with the Business Forum and the Lions Club and the Chamber. And to do that, we need the facility. The facility it obviously costs some money to do, as well as AGP is going to film it. What we're trying to do is keep the cost down for the candidates, and maybe pass the cost of the AGP onto the candidates and not so much add the extra cost, because it does get very expensive for the candidates. And last year or the year before last, the chamber absorbed a lot of the cost, but it's a trying year for everyone. So we would hope that you receive the letter and that you take that under consideration. And lastly, well, there's a lot of things, but I want to take up a lot of the time. I do want to mention about our fulfillment program and the BID. I've been up here a couple of times before, but I have to tell you, it's just amazing to go from 200 or 300 fulfillments every month to 1,000 plus every month. In the past 5 months, we've exceeded 6,000 fulfillments. 5,000 fulfillments were generated last year in a 12-month period. That's phenomenal. We don't know what the implication of that's going to be. We don't know how deep that's going to make our visitors. Hopefully it's 10 deep at every store. But we don't know. We do know that whatever the program is, we initiated now by the BID and the promotions and the visitor center, is working. Let's keep it working. Let's see if we can continue this growth. And I compared this with some of the other cities. One, Pismo, we are actually doing more fulfillment than they are. That is absolutely tremendous. So we just need to keep the ball rolling. It is working, and let's keep it going.
Great.
That's what I have.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Ed Krovitz, and I am a Morro Bay registered voter. I'm here tonight to talk about the opportunity, the upcoming opportunity we have for our city primary election. We are very fortunate to have a number of well-qualified candidates who are willing to step forward and devote a large portion of their personal time to guide our city. And what I want to do is talk about one of those candidates, who is Rick Grantham. Many of our citizens know Rick, and many do not. So Rick is inviting those that do know him and those that would like to learn more about him to this rally, and we want to get that date straight. It's Sunday, April 25th, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Tognazzini's Dockside Restaurant. There'll be plenty of complimentary food, live music, and the opportunity to meet Rick one-on-one and discuss with him your personal concerns and ideas about the future of our city. So mark your calendar, Sunday, April 25th, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Dockside 2 restaurant. Food, fun, live music, and the opportunity to get to know the next mayor of Morro Bay, Rick Grantham. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My name is Marilyn Glessman, and I am representing the Morro Bay Garden Club. And yes, I do live in Morro Bay. This August, we are coordinating Dahlia Day's celebration of Morro Bay's official flower. It is in August because that is when dahlias are in bloom. A brief history of dahlia celebrations. April 1965, City Council selected the dahlia as Morro Bay's official flower. In 1967, more than 12,000 residents and visitors attended here in Morro Bay. Unfortunately, when the local garden club disbanded, the Dahlia Festival was lost. The Morro Bay Garden Club was reorganized in 2006. Its first sponsored event was Dahlia Days, held at the Morro Bay Library. Each year then, Dahlia Days has grown. I'm so nervous. I'm sorry.
Don't be nervous. Just talk to us. That's all you have to do.
Last year, the event was moved from St. Timothy's Parish Hall to the Community Center as it better accommodates the growing attendance. This year, the theme is Dancing Dahlias, and will feature Miss Karen's dance studio as Dancing Dahlias, our local 4-H club teens, Morro Bay Historical Society, other area garden clubs, and dahlia growers. Kickoff is Friday evening, 4 p.m. to 6, with wine and cheese reception featuring Mr. Kevin Larkin. He is the current president of the National Dahlia Growers Society from Corralitos, California. Saturday's program is 1 to 4 p.m. Joe and Jill Sable from San Luis Obispo will be bringing hundreds of varieties of dahlias, blooms ranging from an inch to over 10 inches across. Local artist paintings will be paired with floral designs. Everyone is welcome to bring their cut dahlias to display. Last year, there were requests to purchase dahlia plants. This year, we are making plants available for purchase. Please help us out by granting us the co-sponsor rate for this event. And thank you.
Thank you. You did fine.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, and our vast audience. My name is Nancy Johnson, and I'm still your best, most qualified candidate for City Council. People ask me why I'm running for City Council. Why are you going to do such a silly thing and spend all your time on this? My answer is that I care about Morro Bay. And one of the ways in which I care is I'm very conscientious. I'm going to research thoroughly everything before I make any decisions, and I'll work to develop sound policies that are going to help improve our city. Also, I'm accountable. I'll be accountable to every voter who elected me to, and not to any special interest groups. The other thing I'm going to do is make myself available to listen to people and their needs and their interests. Therefore, one of the things I'm doing is holding a series of meet and greets. So if anyone in our audience would like to get their neighbors and friends together, I'd be glad to arrange a schedule, a time with you when I'll come and answer all your questions. I've done a couple of these already, and I find that they're very effective. So if you want to get hold of me, my phone number is 772-3738. And I do have some times available where we can schedule these. The last thing is that we're going to have a get-together April 23rd at the new Pelican Grill from 5:30 to 7. We're going to have lots of fun, some music, and some great prizes. And we've made arrangements with Phil that you can get two tacos and a beer for $10. Such a deal. So please come join us on April 23rd from 5:30 to 7. And in the meantime, give me a call about setting up a meet and greet, because I know different folks in our city have different issues, and I'm very happy to answer your questions and discuss your issues. Again, my phone number is 772-3738. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members, and City staff. My name is Deanna Kennedy, and I'm a candidate for City Council. I did want to say up front, Fred's Grill, it's over next to Taco Bell by 41 and Main Street. We're having a meet and greet and refreshments, and that will be from 4 to 6 on the 18th. That's Sunday. Also, because I care about Morro Bay, one thing I wanted to state was, and I know I've said this over and over again, but I think it's worth saying, I am against marijuana dispensaries in the city of Morro Bay. One of the reasons is because I have had the opportunity to work with law enforcement agencies all through the United States, and I've also worked with the DEA directly. And I know there are lasting effects anytime you have medical marijuana in a town or city. I'm also aware of a 55-page report from police officers, and I'm glad to share that with anyone. There's a 55-page report that describes each and everything that transpired in the 14 states that have marijuana dispensaries. So I feel like I've pretty much educated myself on that. However, I know that for one report, there's always another one. I understand that. But if I can't believe the police reports, then what am I to believe? And again, I want to thank those that came out for my town hall meeting. We had a few people, but it was good. And we walked away a little smarter. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Peter Beeman, and I'm part of the new Morro Bay 4th Committee, and we will be having fireworks this year in Morro Bay. We had a fundraiser planned this last Sunday at Dockside, and a dozen barbecued oysters and a pitcher of beer for $20, live entertainment, but we were not blessed with fair weather, and we had a couple of hardy souls out there, including Noah, fighting the elements, and we're redoing it this next Sunday at Dockside. Anybody who's already bought tickets, those will be honored, and I'd like to invite you to please come out and help support fireworks in Morro Bay. Thanks a lot.
Great, thank you. Hope for better weather.
And those are the jumbo oysters, by the way.
Hi, I'm Neil Farrell. I'm running for mayor, but that's not why I'm here tonight. I just want to reiterate what Peter said about the The oyster feed, I'm on the Morro Bay 4th Committee, the vice president. It was miserable all weekend. Another thing that was going on was the Morro Bay Beautiful had an artist here to doing some more of those art cans. Two tile mosaics out on the Harbor Walk. And that poor kid Ruben froze himself on Saturday. And on Sunday, he got blown all the way back to Bakersfield. So he's coming back, I think, Wednesday. And he's going to be working out there. So if you're going for a walk on the Harbor Walk, stop and say hello. He's a real nice young man. He's got his whole family down there helping him. And it's really a cool thing. And go check out the one that's by the rock, the farthest one down right across from the restroom. It is gorgeous. This kid does fantastic work. What was the other thing? Oh, I want to thank everybody for the yard sale on the weekend. Saturday, this town was a madhouse. There were thousands of people here going to all those yard sales. We had one on Morro Bay Boulevard for the 4th of July committee, and we sold everything on Saturday. We didn't even have to go out on Sunday, thankfully, because that's when I was supposed to work. But, they came up with a different strategy. Everything was free. Just give us a donation, and everything flew out of that place, and we made, like, more than $3,000. So it was a fabulous fundraiser. I want to thank everybody. I love that yard sale. That is great. We should do that more often in this town. Thank you.
We need to thank Ann Reisner for that. Oh, yeah. A lot of work.
Hello. I'm Bill Yates, resident of Morro Bay. I wasn't going to speak tonight, but I feel compelled to because we've got all this competition going on now. So I will say this publicly, that I am running for mayor. I think all the candidates to come up here and speak, and you guys too, is just taking away the business time. I've said this before years ago. This shouldn't be the forum for politics, and I'm sorry that it is, and it appears that it's going to be that way. And if everybody does it, well, I'm going to do it too. I'm running for mayor because I'm frustrated. It's the same reason I've always run for mayor before, and I've done it 3 times before, and those of you who know me, make your own judgments. Pretty lighthearted about it. I think we need to focus on what's at hand. What are the problems at hand? It seems, I don't know. The biggest problem to me in this town is not whether or not we have medical marijuana dispensaries and how this is becoming the number one issue when we have all these other problems kind of boggles me. And I hope that we are able to put it in perspective and put it where it belongs. I'm having a reception. I don't have a name for it. I don't like reception. I will not call it fundraiser. Fundraising is very low key with me this time. I always felt we've overspent on these races. So I'm having a reception also on the 25th, Rick, at 5 to 7. So you can go to Rick's from 11 to 1 and meet Rick and get a little more of a lunch and then have a nice afternoon and come over to mine at Windows on the Water at 5. And you can have a Morro Bay dinner over there, and no one's going to ask anybody for any money. Just meet, ask what you want. And on Cinco de Mayo, that would be 5th of May, Troy League is putting on one of his fabulous pig roast luau's for his father, George League, and myself. It will probably come as a big surprise to many of you that George and I support one another, and that will be a joint get-together for everybody to come out to. So I'm listed in the book. I could give my phone number. Okay, I will. 772-2341. But I'm in the phone book. I'm on the Internet. Look up my number. Anybody wants to talk to me, just give me a call. I'm going to try and get out to the farmers markets. If you get down to those, if you see me, approach me. We'll chat. And I wish all the candidates the best of luck. And here we go to the primary.
Thank you.
Forgive me for this. And Chief Dorohan, bravo on the great job you've done for us. I think the proof is in the pudding that we've had us maintain a safe town here. And that says it all. Thank you.
Ken Vestibel, resident of Morro Bay. Very briefly, just want to remind you that the car show is coming up. And we're very excited. We thought with the economy would have a little bit of a downturn. And fortunately, we're probably going to be rated close to the 500 cars that normally come. What we're asking is any business that's affected by the car show or any resident or any council member that wants to buy a for instance, a $25 gift certificate to their favorite restaurant, grocery store, or gas station. It really, car shows are becoming very, very competitive. And to keep the people coming back, we're trying to do everything to help them. And we know that the car show does affect Morro Bay financially for that weekend. So if you can help them out, it's not helping us out, it's helping yourself out as a business, and it's really helping try to keep these people coming here. So we appreciate it. Also want to thank the Follies for the community, that, along with the Follies, that have helped raise funds. It has reduced reduced the car show fees for the city by almost 3/4. So we appreciate that. Thanks for all your efforts and for those people who helped put on that show. Thank you very much. And Chief DeRohan, thank you very much. Congratulations for all your work that you've done with this city.
Thank you.
Barry Brannon, a resident of Morro Bay. And I'd just like to talk about the Medical Marijuana Subcommittee. It was a meeting last week, and the most significant thing was the attendance. There were about 22 or 23 people there, and of the attendees, there were 10 of them, or perhaps 11, were not Morro Bay residents. They were, this one doctor was as far away from Santa Barbara. The point is that the pro and con was not split down the middle. It was 15, I would say, that were pro-medical marijuana dispensary, and probably 6 were against it. But of those 15, 10 or 11 were from out of the city. So what it looks to me is if we're being overwhelmed by the outsiders who can't get this approved in their cities, and they want to come to Morro Bay and bring their money and rent an expensive place and open their marijuana dispensaries. And I think that this needs to be on the ballot so the citizens have something to say, because it doesn't appear that the city council wants to make a decision maybe they do, but it doesn't seem to be that way. But I'd like to see this on the ballot. If possible, if you could put it up, it would make a lot more sense. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to the council. Noah, you had a comment?
Yeah, I just had a follow-up to Mr. Brannon's comments. We do have 2 other meetings scheduled for the Medical Marijuana Subcommittee. Both of them are in May. The next meeting is the 4th of May from 5:30 to 7:30. And then the next meeting that's scheduled is the 18th of May, same time, 5:30 to 7:30, and both of those are at the community center.
And again, we're not doing a pro or con on this. What we're trying to do is get an ordinance in place, and having the input from people who are operating these is very helpful in getting that ordinance in place in case it all becomes something that we need to do, because marijuana is legal in the state if it goes to that vote. So we're trying to be proactive and protective at this point.
An important point as well, not to get too into this right now, but there are some lawsuits in the state currently against communities that have implemented bans. And so what we see is this ordinance is something that we need to have regardless whether we implement it or not, as a backup to make sure that we have regulations in place in the case that either of these lawsuits in the state are upheld.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
I'd just like to announce, since all the other candidates for mayor have announced that I also am running for mayor, I just think that you need to know that there are 4 candidates that are running. Thank you.
All right. I'm just going to ask, is there anybody want to pull anything from our consent agenda, A2 through A6, since we have some of them already done?
I'd like to pull 3 and 5.
3 and 5. Okay, and is that for conversation, just a correction? Or I'm trying to decide if we can do this before our public hearings or not.
I 3 will be a discussion.
Okay. And 5 is
a comment.
Okay. Would you like to make that comment now?
I can.
Okay. Because I'm just trying to get those people that are here for these able to go, so we get to our public hearings.
Would you like the other items?
Yes. Does anybody else want to pull anything? Okay. I'd like approval on A2, 4, and 6, please.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay, Betty, A3.
A5 is the approval of the one-lock subdivision for the business at 600 Morro Bay Boulevard. And it's really more of a side comment than it is
for the map, though I did try to see if it was related to the map, and it has to do with the trees that were planted in the public right-of-way. And I did go back and check the minutes and the tape, and I believe the council at that time was very strong about trying to retain the canopy trees for Morro Bay Boulevard as they are now. And that as the developer replanted, that wish did not happen for a variety of reasons. And so I want to encourage the tree committee to move swiftly forward with that list so we can get things squared away.
Okay. Any other comments on A5? Okay. Then I move approval of A5.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. All right. We'll do A3 later, but right now we'll take a short break and come back with our public hearing items. Wow, we're having public hearings and the public just totally exited. All right. We'll start with item B1. This is consideration of a resolution authorizing one-time rent credits for city tenants to reduce vacancies on the Embarcadero and stimulate businesses. And Rick?
Good evening again, Madam Mayor and Council. Staff, the recommendation is that staff, City Council adopt Resolution 2110 approving a one-time rent credit of up to $6,000 for those city tenants on modern format master leases, subject to percentage of gross sales rent to reduce vacancies and stimulate businesses on the Embarcadero. I'm going to read the background here just quickly, just I think for the audience as much as anything, the audience at home, I guess.
Not much. The candidates are here.
Yes, there are a few people here. September 14, 2009, the City Council held a public hearing. We attached the agenda item on that September 2009 public hearing for your review. The purpose of that was to discuss strategies to prevent and reduce vacancies on the Embarcadero and to stimulate business. Following meeting on September 28, 2009, the City Council passed Resolution 4709 to authorize staff to negotiate payment plans on modern city lease agreements, also to allow for quarterly minimum rent payments on modern city leases, also to waive the 2009-2010 CPI increase to minimum rents, and to approve office uses on second floors of lease site buildings in compliance with city and planning and land use requirements. So after that extensive discussion in September and some prior discussions, the City Council took significant steps to try to address the economic downturn, especially as it relates to vacancies on our city properties. At that time, we discussed a number of other strategies that you could undertake to try to reduce vacancies further. They're included in the staff report, and I won't review them from that September 2009 meeting. But you did show interest in some of those, and you did indicate to staff that you would like to monitor the situation and review those options again and the situation within 6 months. So the purpose of this meeting is to complete that review. Vacancies have continued. We all know that the economic downturn still continues. It does seem to be showing glimmers of a little bit of upswing. The commercial retail market, though, is very, very soft still. Many tenants still have vacancies, not just on the Embarcadero waterfront, but throughout the county and throughout the state, especially commercial tenants. What we're proposing to you tonight is another step that you can take. It will cost the city some money in lost rental revenues, but it is potentially an important step in directly addressing trying to reduce vacancies. What we're suggesting to you tonight in this resolution is that we offer a rent credit under a number of conditions. And if you don't mind, I'll turn to that page. The number one condition I want to make clear to everybody that does somewhat limit the availability of this rent credit is that it would only be available to people that are on modern master city leases that are subject to paying percentage of gross sales rent. We included a list of those businesses that have previously or within recent memory, within recent history, been paying percentage of gross sales rent to give you an idea of how many that might be. We anticipate that there's at least one tenant that will take up the $6,000 rent credit within the next year and a half that we're suggesting it be available. There is a possibility up to as many as six tenants. We see that as highly unlikely. It would be would actually be far beyond the existing vacancies. We have a couple of sites that, that could potentially be eligible for this if they have vacancies and if they were indeed to also increase their gross sales and start paying percentage rent. But not impossible, but unlikely. So some of the other conditions here I would outline for you that this actually is structured to be a $3,000 rent credit per vacancy. So in the most, almost all our tenants in these ground lease multi-use sites in the Mid-Embarcadero have multi-tenant subleases arrangements. And they, if a tenant has two spaces vacant, they could apply for, and they're currently vacant, and they have they fill them with a new business that is not from an, anywhere else within the city, not existing, well, not relocating from another site within the city or especially on the city Embarcadero, then they can apply for the full $6,000. If they just fill one space, then they can only apply for and receive the $3,000 rent credit. So it's actually $3,000 per up to two vacancies, a total of no more than $6,000 for a period that will expire in on June 30th, 2011, so for the approximate next 16 months. That would be, if we'll keep it quick tonight, I think we covered most of the points. I would open it up for your questions at this time.
Okay. Any questions for Rick?
Just a follow-up clarification. You would like us to discuss the minimum rent and increase CPI increase and whether we want to try to recapture that or not?
Right. I actually, so to review that, in your action in September, you directed us to waive the what would have been a 3.5 consumer price index increase that would contractually have been, that actually was contractually added to their minimum rents on July 1, 2009, for the July 1, 2009 to June 30, 2010 period. In September of that year, because of the recession, the feedback we're getting from many businesses, you took action to waive that CPI increase. We took off the 3.5% increase on their bills, and so their rents were flat from the previous year. And if you read the lease contracts carefully, you can read the lease contract to say that basically that, that CPI should now be calculated back in. You can also read it that it, we can, like any good lease, you can read it another way and say, well, perhaps perhaps we just base it on last year's CPI. Now, last year's CPI was actually a negative number for the first time that I can remember, minus 0.8, less, little less than 1%. So the end result is that because this is city public funds, we wanted to bring this issue to your attention, get some clarity. It was my assumption that the council did not want us to go ahead and try and recapture that 3.5% CPI that we waived last year, that we will just go ahead and apply the 2009 annual CPI, which was a little less than a negative 1% or 0.8%, negative 0.8%. And the minimum rent then, effective July 1, 2010, will actually be slightly down versus flat last year. So there's some more rent relief potentially for those tenants in that method. And again, this was hopefully I didn't confuse you with that explanation, but because of the nature of this public monies, we wanted to make sure that we were interpreting the council's direction correctly and the lease correctly.
Madam Mayor, I have a question, two questions. One question, Mr. Algard, is I have to say that I understood number three criteria about new businesses to mean only new businesses from the Embarcadero, not new throughout the city. But if that's what the council wants, and if I misunderstood that, that's fine. But my thought was it would just be new businesses across the Embarcadero. So I guess that's not a question. It's a comment.
Madam Mayor, may I respond a little bit?
Yeah.
I think the resolution as written, and it is a little redundant, it says as written, it says if it cannot be a business in that currently exists in the city of Morro Bay.
Yeah.
So if you want it to just be not a business that's relocating from other places in the Embarcadero, you should probably take that out.
Okay. And then my question is related to what you were just talking about, the CPI. I have suggested in the past that we amend all our leases so that when it says that we go with the CPI, when it goes up, that we should never allow it to go down.
And so if we can, in this one instance, as we did one instance last year, not let it go up, could we also not let it go down this year and just have it hold? Since they, in a sense, got a good 3.5 credit, can we do that as well?
I'll start. I think Rob's going to say something. Why don't you try it too, Rob? Because, you know, my opinion is that that we were able to waive the language last year because we were giving something away, and we were fairly certain that the tenants weren't going to object, even though the contract said the city is supposed to raise their rent 3.5% because of the CPI adjustment that's in the contract. You know, we can always get agreements of our tenants to reduce the rent. Now, in this case, the contract actually specifically saying that we will adjust it downward or upward with the CPI, as you rightly noted in your past comments. The contract does say that we should reduce in that amount. Now, the point where it gets a little bit unclear is this right that we have to potentially recalculate and recapture the last year's CPI. Rob, you want to help
me? I'm fine with not recapturing if we don't go down this year.
Yeah, I'd have to look into that issue. I think what Mr. Auger is saying is correct. I mean, you unilaterally decided not to have the CPI increase. That was unilaterally, and I guess the other side could have said, no, I want to pay it anyways, but that doesn't happen. Now you're trying to take away something from them that they think they should have, and they could object to that. The question is can we recapture the one that we had before and even them out? I'd have to look at the exact clause in the contracts. But if that's the direction of council, to try to look for a way not to have the CPI reduced pursuant to the contracts, then we can look at it.
We could use it in other language. Was okay, we'll just recoup that one.
Exactly. That's what I would try to see the language if it could be read that way.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, other questions? All right, it seems to me that the issue of whether it's any business in Morro Bay that moves down to the Embarcadero, or were we talking about just another business on the Embarcadero already? Do we want to distinguish between those two, or is it the movement of any business?
I think it's the movement of any business because you're just going to recirculate from one to the other, and the rent incentive is supposed to be to bring new business. So it gives incentive to the property, the leaseholder, to find new businesses, not regenerate.
I guess I was looking at it as we're trying to regenerate our leases, the ones that we're responsible for, that fund our harbor. So to not hurt other harbor leases, but I guess I was willing to rob from Peter to pay Paul down the Embarcadero. No?
I'd prefer not to do that. I know it makes it a slightly more challenging to attract a new business entirely to the city, but that's my hope and intent with this. I wouldn't want to see other businesses recirculating or recycling down.
Rick, you agree with that?
I agree with what Carl had to say about that. And, you know, you say we would have one that would take care of this and up to six. We're probably looking at two or three to be realistic. This is just one more series and a move of small steps that we've taken, but it's a step nevertheless. And to try and be responsive and remain responsible, and I'm not for recouping the 3.5 CPI, just to lay that out.
About balancing it with the minus 0.8?
I could live with that. But I am for adopting this resolution.
Okay. And how do you feel about the... Oh, yes. Forgot. This is a public hearing. Would anyone like to speak on this issue? There were so few public out there, I wasn't going to recognize you. I apologize.
Hi, Neil Farrell, Morro Bay. I'm sure that the leaseholders on the waterfront are very grateful for what you guys are doing, doing something. That's great. But it seems to me that you might be addressing the wrong problem. I don't think the problem is the rent. I think the problem is the lack of customers. So I would encourage you to look at possibly... Got a lot of money in reserves in the harbor, and I don't think we're going to be doing a new harbor office. So we've got some money there. Let's take some of that money out, and let's go over to the valley and do a media blitz. Let's go buy a whole bunch of radio ads, TV ads, cable television. Let's get the name Morro Bay in people's heads over and over and over and over again, and let's try and get some more people to come over here. I think that's the real problem here, is that we've had some really slow months
last summer was pretty bad, from what I've been told. And this winter has just been horrible. Of course, it's been really lousy weather, too. But I think the main problem is that we don't have the people coming here. So let's try and – I think we should try and do a media blitz, get the name Morro Bay in everybody's head. You know, it's like the old – what is the old joke about the worst song in the world on the radio? You hear it a million times, and pretty soon you're walking down the street humming the song, you know. Let's try and do that. Radio is a really, really affordable – I shouldn't be saying this because I'm a newspaper man, but radio is a pretty affordable and very effective media, advertising media. So I think maybe we should consider taking a little bit of money and let's put together some really, really sharp, good radio ads, and let's go blitz the valley with it and see if we can get some more people to come over here. I think that's the real problem. It isn't the rent. And a one-time rent credit is great, but when your tenants are 6 months behind on their rent and they owe you tens of thousands of dollars, $6,000 is a nice gesture, but it doesn't make up for it, okay? And I'd also think that I would like to see you guys try and expedite this Maritime Museum. We've been talking about it for 15 years, and now my understanding is they've come back with another design. I think you should try and expedite that. Let's get that thing in there. Let's create a tourist attraction for people when they come here. I think that's our main problem in Morro Bay, is it's boring. Okay? It's a beautiful town, the most beautiful town on the Central Coast, without a doubt. But if you're a family with little kids, there's not a lot to do. A museum on the waterfront, could you imagine how well the Natural History Museum would do if it was on the Embarcadero? Let's get this Maritime Museum going. That'll be a good fix for the long run. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back. Okay. Well, just to respond briefly, what Peter Candela was saying earlier is we've had the fulfillment. We've had tons of people coming. The problem is they're not buying things, and that's, I think, a sign of the times. Anyway, okay, so how do we all feel about this? Carla?
Well, and just to piggyback on that, the Harbor Fund money isn't for promoting. Right. We use the bid, the promotions, and the visitors funding for that. And there is infrastructure needs, so the reserves in the Harbor Fund are directed towards replacing the pier and some other things that we don't have enough money for. So, we can't take that to spend on that, just for clarification.
Correct. So how do you feel about this?
I absolutely support offering the rent incentives. It's just the next step, I think, as Mr. Alkert said, that along the process of trying to help stimulate some opportunities, a lot of the other areas are doing rent credits to try and bring new tenants in and stimulate some opportunity. I know that one of the leaseholders down there has mentioned going over to the Valley to a business seminar in hopes of encouraging some businesses to come over this way, and maybe that would be something to help entice a few of them. And as far as the CPI, I think we waived the increase last year to allow another opportunity for them to get through, but I would not be opposed to, rather than reducing it again, staying flat and so recouping that 0.08 of the 3.5 right. instead, just so the rent stays status. But I'll go with the majority on that, but I'm fine.
Okay. No?
Yeah, I'd like to agree with Ms. Borchardt. We do have some really serious and long-term expenses down on the waterfront, and as far as our infrastructure goes. So we need to be careful about seeing that, and at the same time understand that it's fueled by active businesses and people going down there and appreciating a well-run, well-maintained waterfront. So I'm in favor of this rent credit. I think the CPI recapture would not be a favorable thing for us to do, so I'm okay with leaving the last year's CPI increase and not trying to recapture that. And I also agree, I think keeping it even at zero this year would be my preference.
Okay, Rick?
Well, my position is the same as it was 5 minutes ago.
Okay. Betty, anything else?
No, I. It sounds like the majority doesn't want to limit it to just the Embarcadero, so that's fine with the way it's written. And the idea of the 0.8 flat taken out of the 3.5 from last
right.
year.
Okay, I agree. So the paragraph 3 would stay as is, but the 4th, whereas, we would like to get different wording on that so that it would stay flat. We'll recoup 0.8% of the credit that we gave them last year on the CPI.
Assuming it's legal.
Assuming it's legal. Yeah, but that's the wording we'd like to have you bring back, I believe. And also on the first page, number 4 at the very bottom, just a typo, must be passed through the subtenants in as.
Oh, right.
I think we cut the in.
All right, we can. Is the suggestion that we bring this back at your next meeting? Or do you want us
I would say, we're in agreement on it. If it's legal, I would assume that you can go ahead and do it.
Would you like a motion then?
Yes, please.
Okay.
I would move that the City Council adopt Resolution 21-10, authorizing one-time rent credits for city tenants to reduce vacancies on the Embarcadero to stimulate business, and to allow the CPI to remain flat this year if possible.
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None.
Thank you.
Okay, so Rob, you'll just let us know then. Okay. All right.
Thanks.
And we move on to item B2. Again, our harbor director. This is adoption of an ordinance to amend the Morro Bay Municipal Code to include a new section to regulate municipal parking and establish authority to charge fees for parking. Introduction and first reading.
Good evening again. We can just talk a little story on this one because it's as you remember, last year you authorized a purchase of pay parking equipment for Tenants Park Bowlock Ramp. You also included in the resolution of the approving the master fee schedule, the harbor fees, a fee for charging for parking in the boat launch ramp. We purchased the machine. We actually have the signs made, and we realized that fairly late in the game that actually there is a state vehicle code section that says cities can only charge for parking by adopting ordinances. So to make sure that we have everything taken care of, we are suggesting or recommending to you tonight an amendment to Section 10 of the Municipal Code to authorize charging for parking. There's a couple of other little issues that are included that I think are just common sense. We did put in it shall be unlawful for a vehicle to exceed a speed limit of 5 miles per hour in a municipally owned lot, and then tampering or breaking with parking devices is a violation of the law. And finally, there's an exception for public vehicles doing public during public duties.
Okay.
I recommend your approval of this ordinance for first reading.
Any questions?
I had one. I had made the suggestion that maybe we change this title to municipal parking lot instead of just municipal parking, because everything relates to a lot, and that kind of separates it, I think, from potentially other parking areas, like street parking, which is something I think we would want to come back with,
mm-hmm.
and that this would be limited to a lot.
Okay.
And the follow-up question to that, my assumption would be if we were to have a discussion or the idea of additional paid parking in some of our city-owned lots would also be a discussion that would come back to us regardless of whether we adopt this tonight.
I would think that this would cover any city parking lot.
But the establishment of new paid parking would definitely be something.
But then if we did have another one, it would fit into these parameters, right?
Thank you.
All right, this is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this issue, please come forward. Now, there's only two of you left and one more public hearing, so you each get to say something at one of them, right? Okay. All right, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. Can I hear a motion, unless there's more discussion?
Can I have one question first for Mr. Schultz? I had asked him by the email today that there was a conflict with an earlier section about limiting to 10 hours, because I think, is this not, Mr. Elgert, for longer than 10 hours? And so do we need to address that?
We'll have to look at that, yes, because I think we're going to allow 72 hours in this parking lot for the boats that go out for more than a long period. And we have the other section, the 1033, that you pointed out, that is from 1 to 10 hours. I think we're okay, though, because that 1 to 10 is more the streets. So I think by putting the lots in here, it might. If not, we'll have to come back and even change that even. So.
Okay. Motion, anyone?
Move approval of ordinance number 555 for introduction and first reading by number and title only.
With the change in title to add lot. I would second that.
Oh,
if
sure.
You could add the word lot.
And add the word lot. To where exactly is that, Betty? On where you want that?
Just right up here.
Oh, okay, at 10-44-70 municipal parking lot.
Second.
Okay, I think Betty seconded, right?
Either way, it's fine.
Okay.
I didn't hear.
All right, we'll let Carla second.
Sorry.
Rick and Carla seconding. Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. All right. Moving on to item
Mayor,
B. I'm sorry, it's a first reading. Go ahead.
This is an ordinance of the City of Morro Bay amending Chapter 10.40 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code to add Section 10.44.070 to regulate municipal parking lots and to establish authority to charge fees for parking.
Thank you. Now we'll move along to item B3. This is a resolution initiating proceedings to levy the annual assessment for the Cloisters Park and Open Space Landscaping and Lighting Maintenance Assessment District. Mr. Woods.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. This evening, staff is recommending City Council adopt Resolution 15-10, which initiates the proceedings to levy an annual assessment to the Cloisters Park and Open Space. The Cloisters Park and Open Space Assessment District was formed in 1996, and the city began maintenance of the parkland and open space in 1999. Each year, City Council holds a series of three public hearings to confirm the levy assessment for the upcoming fiscal year. Tonight's the first of those three. Upon adoption of Resolution 1510, the second public hearing to review the engineer's report and to notice the intent of the levy of the assessment is scheduled for your consideration May the 10th, 2010, at your regular meeting. This concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Any questions for Mr. Witz?
And I tried to get a hold of you this afternoon, Joe, but wasn't able to. My question was, I noticed these figures are the same and have been the same for a few years. And how long has that been going on? And it's evaluated on a yearly basis due to the engineer's report, right? But apparently everything just stays the same and the price remains the same.
Yeah, so far that's been the case. We haven't exercised anything to increase that rate or decrease it. So we're trying to keep the fees the same in that assessment district and try to maintain the same level of service as we have in the beginning.
Okay, thank you. Okay. We'll open it for public hearing. There's no one left, so we'll bring it back. May I hear a motion?
I move approval of Resolution 1510, initiating proceedings to levy the annual assessment for the Cloisters Park and Open Space Landscaping and Lighting Maintenance Assessment District.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. And item B4, which is resolution initiating proceedings to levy the annual assessment, yada yada, for North Point Natural Area Landscaping and Lighting Maintenance District. Mr. Woods.
Thank you, Mayor. Council, this evening we are also recommending you adopt Resolution 16-10, which initiates proceedings to levy the annual assessment for the North Point Natural Area. The North Point Natural Area was formed in 1996, and the city began the maintenance of the natural area in 1997. Each year, the City Council holds a series of three public hearings to confirm the levy of the assessment for the upcoming fiscal year. This, again, is the first of the three. Upon your adoption of Resolution 16-09, the second public hearing to review the engineer's report and to notice the intent to levy the assessment is scheduled for your consideration May 10th, 2010, at your regular meeting.
All right.
That concludes my report. Thank you.
Any questions? Okay.
On the lighting on either of these two places, were they included in that energy audit that we had?
I believe so. So I can say for certain I don't have that report in front of me because we have a variety of different lightings, outside lightings. I do believe we included the assessment districts closer to the North
Point. Any changes?
There's no lighting up at North Point. The only lighting we have is over at the Cloisters. And so if there would be a change, it would be recognized in an engineer's report, which you'll be able to review at your next regular meeting.
That's confusing because it says lighting maintenance assessment district, so like at North Point. But there's no.
It's a legal name.
Okay. Confusing.
All right, we'll open this one for public hearing. And there's still no public, so we'll bring it back. And may I hear a motion?
Move approval of resolution number 1610, initiating proceedings to levy the annual assessment for North Point Landscaping and Lighting Maintenance District.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Gosh, we're just moving right along. I had us scheduled for a break. We don't need it. Okay, we'll move to item C1. Oh, wait, let's go back to our consent. Let's finish our consent agenda. That was item A3, right, Betty?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what did you want to discuss on that one?
Oh, I just pulled the wrong one. This is item A3, which is permitting a sublease at Burgess Landing for Long Island Adventures, which is a tour company. And I am pulling this because I'm going to vote against it. I think it's not legal, according to Measure D, that this kind of business is not permitted out there. It's not a fishing adventure. It's a tour business. And we've had this discussion in the past, and I believe that there's still one boat down there that's probably a tour boat that actually shouldn't be there either. But to bring in a new one, knowing that this is not appropriate zoning, I think is wrong.
Excuse me.
So I think that either we need to talk about changing that in the measure and saying that we will allow this kind of business in that fishing area, or we need to abide by our ordinance, which says that there will be no other kinds of businesses down there.
Okay,
other new businesses down there.
Rick, did you have any comments on that?
Again, I guess the city attorney or myself, I think we understand your point of view. You could interpret it that no such use, you know, could be allowed down there. We have a history of looking at the implementing that Measure D as it's codified in general, that all of Verge's uses are grandfathered in, pre-existing non-conforming uses as written in the actual proposition that was passed by the people. And so we respectfully disagree with your position, but I think I understand what you're saying.
And my response would be, before Mr. Schultz chimes in, is that there was a pre-existing business, and now you're going to put two non-conforming businesses at that one location. So I don't see how that's grandfathering in a business that already exists there. You're actually adding to a use that's not permitted. So I would not interpret it that way.
Rob, did you have a comment? Okay. And, well, I'm going to ask you for a comment. What is your feeling on this?
We've always interpreted that is grandfathered in, just like Harbor Hut is and just like GAFCO is. Those are businesses that existed before Measure D and will continue to be grandfathered in. You've granted the new lease to Verges, which includes those dock spaces.
So because it's still the existing business owner of Verges, if they were to go away, then we would look at it differently.
Not necessarily. You could still grandfather in those dock spaces.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion, comments, Carla?
Oh, no, I was just going to make a motion.
All right, go ahead.
Move approval of A3.
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay, it's 4-1 with Ms. Winholz opposed. Okay, now we move on to C1. Which is a status report on the A-frame sign program. Bob?
Good evening, Madam Mayor, City Council. I'm here to give you an update on where we stand on our A-frame sign program and review some various options that we might have and to receive direction on the method to proceed. As you know, the zoning ordinance was adopted in 1997, and A-frame signs are prohibited per our existing zoning ordinance. Draft guidelines were devised, and A-frame signs were allowed on an interim basis. These guidelines were approved in December of 2000, and then the new sign regulations were adopted in the end of December of 2000. The Planning Commission wanted to consider sign exception permits, which would allow these A-frame signs on a year-by-year, case-by-case basis. In 2005, the city undertook a comprehensive zoning ordinance update. Includes completely revised sign regulations. Under these new regulations, these temporary sidewalk signs, A-frame signs, in the commercial type districts are allowed. As you well know, that zoning ordinance is in limbo in the Coastal Commission awaiting approval. In 2009, we received several complaints regarding unpermitted A-frame signs. And in fact, all the A-frame signs that are in existence are unpermitted A-frame signs. The police volunteers conducted a sign survey for us and indicated that there are 73 A-frame signs on display in the community. The last A-frame sign permit, exception permit, was granted in 2004. All those permits expired in 2005, resulting in, as I said, all of the A-frame signs are exist without permit. Under the current A-frame sign program, when a business wants an A-frame sign, they would apply for an exception permit, the $20 fee, and then we would take those to Planning Commission once per year. I know that previous planning directors found that process to be too cumbersome, and so these permits were allowed to languish in the process. Also, the $20 fee does not even come close to recovering staff costs for the review of the permits. As part of our review, we researched several other cities in the area to see how they deal with the permits, and there's a table on page A3 of the staff report, and they have a variety of different ways in addressing their A-frame sign programs, allowing them, not allowing them, with a fee, without a fee. But generally, for the most part, they seem to be allowed, but with some sort of permit fee and some sort of permit process. On page 4 of the staff report, we go through the options of how we could proceed with this A-frame sign issue, from enforce the current zoning ordinance and prohibit all the existing A-frame signs. That would basically become a code enforcement activity. To separate out the sign ordinance from the zoning code and get approval of that separately from the rest of the zoning code as an amendment through the Coastal Commission, implement the Atascadero guidelines, although we would still need to do an exception permit or get the existing code approved. And our recommendation is to work with Coastal Commission, get this sign ordinance package approved, and in conjunction with that, implement an Atascadero-like sign program. So there's a simple application that somebody would make. If it's within the public right-of-way, we have certain standards for clearance. They would pay an encroachment permit fee. They would hold the city harmless for any liability, and they would be allowed. In conclusion, our existing guidelines and process is very cumbersome at best. Like I said, we would recommend pursuing separate certification of the city sign ordinance and implementing a program similar to the Atascadero A-frame sign program as a clear, concise implementation tool. That concludes my staff report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Okay. Questions?
So tell me the difference between what's an encroachment and what's a non-encroachment. Is that number of feet in a sidewalk that you can put it in, or when it gets in the way of people walking, or what?
Anything within the public right-of-way is an encroachment, so it's encroachment into the public's right-of-way. Regardless if there's even if there's not sidewalk, there could be an encroachment into the public's right-of-way. For example, on many streets in Morro Bay, the street section might be 40 feet wide, yet we have, because we were subdivided in the earlier part of the last century, we liked very wide right-of-ways at that time in the history, 80 feet of right-of-way. I guess we thought we were going to have freeways going on of all of our local streets. So we have very wide right-of-way. So there might be 20, sometimes in the very narrow streets at the upper north end of town, we might have, you know, 30 feet, 20 to 30 feet behind that street area that is still within the right-of-way. That people might consider that part of their front yard, and we're glad that they maintain that as part of their front yard because other options wouldn't be as attractive. So anyway, that in a nutshell, or maybe not so much of a nutshell, the right-of-way is generally wider than the street or the sidewalk.
Well, wouldn't you agree that the vast majority of the A-frames that we have right now are in the encroachment?
Yes, most of the A-frame signs are on the sidewalk. And some, you know, some business owners take better care of where they're placed than others.
Okay.
Noah, you have a question?
Yeah, a couple of questions. One with the idea of separating this out and send it to the Coastal Commission for a separate amendment. What do you think the success of that is as far as a timeline to get back to us? And the follow-up question would be, we've talked about doing that with other items of city business, and is there the chance that we could abuse that amendment process and turn the Coastal Commission off from being willing to accept those sort of requests? This is just a concern that I have that I want to make sure.
I think we have an opportunity here to declare sort of a new day with the Coastal Commission to establish a better working relationship with them and to find out exactly what is causing this backlog and to try to work with them to get these approved. Cities are allowed 4 amendments per year to their existing code. So I don't think we'd be abusing our privilege to amend our code. If, on the other hand, they're receptive to approving the entire zoning code in quick order, we might want to look at that. But I kind of doubt that. The sign code is a fairly simple section of the code. It would allow us a modern sign code to use in this town, and I think it'd be very much more business friendly than our existing sign code.
My last question is with Atascadero's encroachment fee. Are you expecting we would be somewhere in that same range to recover our staff costs?
If we charge what our existing encroachment permit fee is, which is $116, that recovers the typical encroachment permit cost. So review of any site plans they might have for where it's placed, reviewing the permit application to make sure that they're holding us harmless. I think on average that would recover our costs.
Other questions?
I have just one.
Okay.
And maybe I misunderstood, but so after the fee, is there a yearly renewal fee? I didn't see that in there, or is it just a one-time fee?
In the Atascadero example, I believe it's just a one-time fee because they've reviewed it once, and they don't renew it on an annual basis. They reserve the right to basically revoke it at any time if it becomes a problem, and then you would have to come back and reapply.
Okay, so I like the Atascadero one. I like the fact that it has to be immediately in front of the business because that's been one of the problems. We've had people putting them on corners that are not close to their business at all. So I like that. And that would still allow the ones at the shopping center to have them on the sidewalk in front of the shopping center, right? Because that is a hard visibility thing on Quintana.
Yes, as long as they're placed in an area that's safe for the pedestrian.
Right. Okay.
That would be approved by
Public Works Department, yes.
Okay. And I think it's only fair to have a fee. This is going to help the businesses. The one question I had in the ordinance that we've set up to the Coastal Commission on, it's on page 200, and it doesn't talk about any locations or anything like that. So what you're saying is that we would combine this and perhaps reference from this paragraph about temporary sidewalk signs to the A-frame, or is the A-frame in another place and I didn't find it?
The temporary sidewalk signs, right, such as A-frame signs, are in this section,
okay,
right here.
So it doesn't reference anything about location,
no,
or anything,
no,
like that?
No, we would have to modify that to make sure that it's consistent with our guidelines that,
okay,
we'd be putting out.
Okay, that was the one thing I was going to ask, if we could do that and have them go up as a package or whatever.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
One of the reasons I think people first started using the A-frames was because they are up a side street and they wanted to put them on the corner so they could get up the street. So to say it has to be right in front of their business may be defeating some of the purpose. Just food for thought.
Which I think is in Atascadero's, and if I'm, maybe I'm wrong, the way I interpret it is that with the encroachment, you could put it out by the street. Is that incorrect? Or?
That's correct. You can put it out by the street, but they're only allowed to put it on the business frontage. They're not allowed to, let's say if they're in the middle of the block, they couldn't bring their sign down to the corner to direct people to their business. It would only be allowed adjacent to that business. And I think it's a practical reason of why they require that is you may have multiple businesses down a side street. How do you pick and choose which?
Right.
I mean, unless we go for something like a location type sign where, you know, the business owners get together, and that's kind of way beyond the scope of what this is. It's just another approach that could be taken.
Well, can I? Another thing is what people will do, they'll disregard that adjacent street part and they'll put it out a little further where a competitor would be. And so that's what I see happening in a couple of places. It's further down a road from a business and maybe nearer a business where a competitor,
mm-hmm,
is.
Right.
And then you spoke briefly about the renewal. I think Carla brought it up, the annual renewal, or did they just get it once and everything? But in this, on page 2, second paragraph down toward the bottom, you say the last A-frame sign permit exception was in 204, and they would have expired, resulting in them, in other words, not being legal. But since we're not asking for annual fees, they really are still legal, right?
That's under our existing regulations. Our existing regulations prohibit A-frame signs except under this exception permit. The procedures for the exception permit was that they needed to be renewed once per year. This is under our existing zoning code, not what we're proposing to get approved by Coastal Commission. So under our existing policies, they would need to get renewed once per year. It's a very cumbersome process for this minor sign.
The other thing that I was wondering that I don't see right off the bat in the Atascadero one is about materials, because I know one of my concerns is that some of the signs are getting pretty shabby looking, and not from age, but simply they were put up there with just plywood and paint, and that's not attractive and not helping our downtown visibility.
I don't think it made it into the but some of the materials Atascadero has out is one of their guideline pages that has to be a professional quality.
Okay.
And we've used that same language in our existing guidelines, and we would continue to use that existing language. Somebody would bring in an exhibit showing what they propose to do.
Right.
Not to say that somebody couldn't make a professional-looking sign by themselves, mm-hmm, with materials that they could use.
Right. I'm not saying it has to be paid for a professional,
right,
but it has to look nice.
It just has to look nice, and it can't
attractive.
be a safety issue. It can't be a sign that's going to fall apart, blow around in the wind.
Right.
Also, these signs need to be taken in on a nightly basis so they don't end up all over the place.
Right.
They tend to migrate at night for some reason.
Is there any binder that a business would have as far as part of their insurance to cover things like people tripping over their signs that are in an encroachment area? I know they say they hold the city harmless, but are they covered for that?
They should be covered
yes.
for that.
I can answer that. In my insurance policy, it includes signage.
I'm just wondering if you're unique or if that...
No, it's a standard.
Is it? Okay.
Well, it could still be part of the application form that they do have to have that coverage.
It could be, but again, verifying insurance on an annual basis for city staff is, once we get a few of these signs out there, is a cumbersome process. We would just like them to hold us harmless, and it would be up to them to make sure that they have the insurance company. It could be a note to them on some of the information materials that said, be sure to check with your insurance company before putting your sign out.
I was thinking of just a part of the application that says that the applicant states that, yes, they do have liability coverage for any injury caused by the sign or whatever the wording would be. But just to have them, that's a check mark that they make. They sign this application. That's saying that they've done it. And that removes us at least one more step from being sued. Okay. Anything else that we want
to? I was curious to know what you see as the process for getting the businesses into compliance and updating them on this transition. Is there a plan there for that?
Well, it would involve probably several weeks of public education. So we would meet with the chamber, with the Merchants Association, prepare informational flyers. This is not reinventing the wheel. Other cities have gone through the same process, and we can borrow from their experiences how they, in fact, Atascadero worked in concert with their chamber when they implemented these regulations to make sure that it wasn't too onerous of a requirement on those businesses. Atascadero also grandfathered all the existing A-frame signs from having to pay for the encroachment permit. That was another part of their process. So any new sign coming in pays for an encroachment permit. I'm not recommending that we do that because it has been such a long time since any of these permits have been any of these signs have been legal signs.
Well, at the same time, in your first explanation, didn't you say that some of them were paying like $300 to get these signs somehow?
Yes.
I would think anybody who's already paid $300 would be exempt from another charge. That's a lot of money.
Yes.
But that's been like 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Well, but even so, we're talking about this being a $115, $16 charge forever. Mm-hmm. So if they've already paid $300, I would say that...
But they've never paid for a permit.
Yeah.
We haven't
No, they did. If they went through that process, they got a permit. It was for 1 year.
I had a permit back when Sandy Ford was here, and it was supposed to be renewed, as Mr. Leivick said, on a yearly basis, but nobody has renewed us for years, so we would owe the $100 for those of us who are pre-existing. And I would think that there'd be an expense for staff to have to catalog all of this and do all this that, we, as business owners, the 73 people who have these already, I could see if you said if you're pre-existing, you pay $100 and the new ones pay $150 or whatever something like that. But yeah, it's going to cost staff time to put this all together.
Okay.
I would just like to comment that it's interesting that we're just what I'm hearing is that we're assuming we're going to do this. I think if you look at what the other cities do, two of them outright ban them. Two others say only on private property. So there's four out of this, towns right there that don't even allow them. And Paso that does, goes through a pretty elongated process to do that. So are we assuming that we're going to do this, or are we going to have a discussion?
Well, I'll start that discussion because I was in on this when the last A-frame sign discussion happened. And the reason that we felt that they were good and allowable here for a couple of reasons. Number one, our tree canopies on Morro Bay Boulevard hide the storefronts, so you can't really see the names of the establishments. Number two, you do have those side streets where it's not real visible from your main streets, and so if they've got something on the sidewalk in front of their business, you can see it. For instance, the hot dog stand from Main Street. You could, you know, if you're looking, if you're stopped at the stop sign, you can see that sign. You know it's there. On Quintana, those businesses up there, you can't see them very well from the street at all. So if you have the A-frames down below, it makes those more visible, and the same thing in North Morro Bay. We just felt that the way that our city is configured, we've got a lot of hard-to-see businesses, and so it was seen as an advantage to them, a help to them to be visible to their customers. So that was the reason for approving them in the first place. The reason that we wanted to go by the permits is because they were sprouting here, there, and everywhere, and they were not in front of the businesses, and they were not looking very nice, and so we wanted to have some control over it. But I'll just open the discussion that way, and then anybody else can chime in.
Okay. Well, thanks to the police volunteers for categorizing everything. I appreciate that. I do like the idea about having them sign a thing that says, I certify the foregoing is true and correct regarding insurance coverage for that. I'm not a big fan of off-site signs, and we have to determine what is off-site. Is anything that's just not right, particularly right in front of their place or not? Public safety is real important to me as far as, you know, trip and falls and things like this and public right-of-ways. So I would like to get something back on the encroachment permit. I don't have to get much back on the one that has no encroachment. I'd like to see at least a minimum 4-foot clearance on a 6-foot sidewalk. And you know, I've had owners of businesses tell me, you know, they point to their sign and they say, you know, that's the best $50 I ever spent. And I don't want to do anything to inhibit the business's ability to advertise, especially when they're not, you're right out in front of you and you can't see it. So I do want to do that, want to help them out as much as we can, but want to be cognizant of the public safety aspect of it and how we're going to enforce it and what the difference is going to be between non-encroached and encroached.
Okay, Betty?
For me, it's kind of like clutter on the sidewalk. And actually, since Mr. Livick's been here, and this may be where I disagree with him, he's really trimmed the trees up pretty high. So all the signs on the businesses are actually visible these days. So, and a sign like the hot dog stand has where it's actually built on the building and comes out, I think presents a neater looking town and more presentable. At the same time, I know that businesses have and continue to want to do the A-frame sign, so it gets real cluttery. But then I think again about the hot dog guy or the coffee rock down the street, that you've got trees where you would probably put your sign, so can cars really see them if we restrict them to being just in front of their businesses? So they almost have to come down to the corner. I don't have a good feel for this, frankly. I guess what I'd like to ask the businesses what their preference is, and I don't know if they've been interviewed or not.
Well, I'll add one other consideration, too, that I forgot to mention, and that's on the Embarcadero where, for instance, Marina Square and the Boatyard, where there's businesses in the back that people on the sidewalk have no idea they're there if they don't see those signs. So that was another.
So at that point, maybe a monument sign where you put everybody's business on that in front of that business would be more effective and neater looking.
Maybe, but they change a lot. Noah, what's your feeling?
Well, because there's a permit process and there's a chance for the Public Services Department to actually evaluate and determine if there's a safe location for the signs to be placed, I'm comfortable with this. I know quite a few restaurants like to have these signs out to promote specials and daily menu opportunities and so on. So I definitely hear Ms. Winholt's concern about clutter and I think that having information here about professional sign starts to cover that. I'm comfortable with the recommendation that staff has. And if we add information on the permit about the insurance, that's something I would appreciate.
And would you agree to a minimum sidewalk width?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Carla?
I appreciate you bringing this back, Mr. Liebig, and all the work on it and looking into the other communities. I read up a little bit on Atascadero's and watched some of their issues they've had on TV with some of their sign problems over there. I want to make sure that in this is included, and it was mentioned in Atascadero's, about the banners also. We have a couple moving A-frame banner signs promoting some businesses that seem to be on vehicles and things. Shifting around town, and it really looks bad when you're driving into the city of Morbay and all of a sudden there's a business banner there on an A-frame sign in the back of a vehicle. So somehow I'd like to be able to have this ordinance address those, and I guess that would come back to what proximity of the area of their business they had to be in. You can't be 2 miles down the road sticking up your A-frame sign every weekend. And down on the waterfront, and the other places, it does become cluttered, so I'd like to try and find a way. I know I agree, businesses do change hands, but if you have six businesses and six A-frame signs out on the sidewalk, it's pretty cluttered. Even though the trees are trimmed, wouldn't do me any good because my business sits at the back of a parking lot, and so people driving down Beach Street wouldn't even see it there. They just drive right by and then realize as they're going down the hill, there's a business there. So I have used an A-frame sign, and when we're given our permit applications. Sandy was very good about making sure they came and took our signs, confiscated them, and we had to pay a fine to make sure we were compliant and went through that whole process. I have a business that's behind me, and I know he depends on a sign being out there by where mine is. I have the ability to put mine within my boundaries of my parking lot, actually, where he wouldn't. So I guess then I would want to know, too, as the tenant there, am I allowed to grant permission for him to put his on my parking lot, directing people back? Because he has an arrow to send them back to his car shop down there. So, you know, that's something I don't see in there. And how do we address that, similar to some of the other things? Can I grant permission for his sign to be on my property? Because I can pull mine off the sidewalk and still have visibility. I think a lot of businesses have the ability to do it. Everybody's gotten laxative about it. And it's really becoming a little problem.
Mm-hmm. Just the last comment, and that's about size. I think, did I read this right, that it's like 2 feet by 5 feet? So, like, it could be 5 feet high?
Yes, that would be the maximum height.
And we could reduce that?
We could reduce that, yeah. You wouldn't want it too low.
Most of them, I think, are 3 feet.
Three feet high. Most typically are about 3 feet high.
Yeah, about 3 feet.
You wouldn't want to reduce it so low that it could become a trip hazard, that somebody wouldn't see it in their normal field of view.
And where do these flags fit into that? Like the coffee flags?
Flags are prohibited under our new sign code, except if they're, you know, U.S. flags, of course. Mm-hmm. The banner type signs on vehicles are still a prohibited sign in our sign code. So it's a matter of taking enforcement on those types of signs. Rob?
Yeah, I was just trying to give you some direction, and I really didn't talk to Mr. Liebig about this, but really what tonight was about, you know, which direction do you want us? And then we would still have to, you know, bring this ordinance back to you for that final approval. I thought it would probably, and I could be misspoken, but I'm even going to Planning Commission to make sure that they flesh out some of these issues before it comes back to you on size and all those things. We were just looking for the direction. Hopefully this can be done quick enough, though. I do want to state, you know, we're only entitled to so many amendments. I thought it was three. Rob says four. We'll have to check. Maybe they did it. But that doesn't mean you can't package this one together with the 2,500 square feet one and the wireless
one.
And so, you know, that's what my thought was, is we want to know if we're on the right direction. We didn't want to go down the road of pulling this all out, doing a lot of work on it, seeing where, because I see some little things that are incorrect, like the political signs that we've got to look at. So, but we didn't want to start doing that if, in fact, the council said, let's go back to just exempting these. So I think that's the direction we want to see, is the overreaching direction, and then we'll get back to you. That's what I thought, but maybe Mr. Liebig was looking for more direction than that.
You are correct. We're looking for direction, and then we would, if there were, you know, changes to the existing sign code as has been adopted in our zoning ordinance, the new sign code I'm speaking of, we would bring that back through Planning Commission, then up to City Council for review and approval.
Well, I think
and I going back to your previous on Coastal Commission, I don't see any real controversial issues in this that we're going to have trouble. Where things get bogged down is a lot in our number one LCP is where we were changing considerable policies that affected the Coastal Act, and that's where it was getting bogged down. The sign ordinance, even the 2500, giving us more review period as opposed to, you know, less review period, I don't think they'd have a problem with. And also wireless is just bringing it up to code. So I don't think any of those amendments so far that we've decided to kind of cut out should have any real problems and should be able to go through fairly easily with Coastal Commission.
Okay. Well, I think it's obvious that we do feel that some sort of control of the A-frame signs is needed, and you've heard all our comments. I'd want to add on to Carlos about the trucks that have the signs on them. I think they're very unattractive and not what we want to encourage, and there are several. I've seen them.
It's difficult. We are looking at, and our code enforcement is looking into, and the issues. It's difficult because there's Mission Linen that has a truck that has theirs on the side of their trucks, or any other truck that delivers, you know, Vons. I mean, so there is that. But there's also these are A-frames that are in the back of trucks. And we're just trying to make certain. And definitely if they're just sitting there for a long period of time, that can be addressed. But if they're on their property, we have a question of could they just convert that into a closed in the back of their truck and have the sign there anyways. But it's something that we are looking into. We know we need to address it, and maybe it can be addressed in this also about that. But we have parking regulations on the other part. We definitely parking it somewhere for a length of time, regardless of how it is. But that the A-frame in the back of a truck presents a different little issue that we have to address because there's no vehicle code to that. If it's on their private property, how that works, we're still looking into.
I think the ones I was referring to are parked on our public streets and things.
Yeah.
There's some with banners on them and some with A-frame signs.
Yeah. Those
we can
address.
They're putting banners on them and parking them on the public streets or putting A-frame signs in the back. So that's why I thought maybe it would relate into this.
Well, and I think that once we have some guidelines established, then we can enforce them, and people will probably agree with them. Right now, it's kind of a free-for-all. What do you think about it going back to the Planning Commission? I think that's a good idea.
Change the motion to just not specifically for A-frame signs, but pull out our entire sign code and get that approved by Coastal Commission.
I would amend my motion to include all sign ordinance.
Second.
Does that cover that?
I'll amend the second.
Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. Thank you. Anybody need a break, or do we forge ahead? All right. Item D2, discussion on guidelines for public area use permits. Joe.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and Council. This evening, staff is recommending Council review the current guidelines, procedures for public area use permits, and direct staff accordingly. When city property is not in use for recreational programs or other city businesses, property may be used by the public and public groups or individuals for social, cultural, and recreational activities. The use of public parks and open space, which require a person or organization to obtain a permit, include the following. Persons or groups are proposing to erect or maintain a table, booth, or similar structure. Groups of persons exceeding 75 or more. Persons or groups desiring to reserve a park or open space for a limited time for their exclusive use. Any persons or groups desiring to make solicitations or sales. Any persons or groups desiring to hold a contest, demonstration, or exhibit in the park or facility for admission or entrance fee where it's been charged. Any persons or groups engaging in the sale or consumption of alcoholic beverages as defined in chapters of Municipal Code 9.18. The permit process is applicant-driven. The applications for use are processed on a first-come, first-served basis, and they're also case-by-case. Applications for review are reviewed by a special events team, which consists of the Recreation Parks Director and city department heads or their representatives. We meet on a monthly basis, generally the second Tuesday, but this month we'll be on the third Thursday, and we review the upcoming events with the applicant, as well as reviewing past events for performance and recommendations. If the application is permitted and the applicant is presented with the assessed fees pursuant to the master fee schedule, and conditions are placed on the permit, which must be met prior to the event. Any additional city services that are provided during the event are invoiced to the applicant post-event. We do not bill the applicants for city equipment used by city staff. Public air use permit applications are available, obviously, at the Recreation Parks Department, also on our website. It can be downloaded. I've attached the Municipal Code 2.24, also a public air use permit application packet, as well as the master fee schedule for your convenience. Pursuant to Council's request, staff has taken this item to the Recreation Parks Commission for review. They reviewed the current guidelines for the public air use permits and recommend no amendments to City Council. At this time, that concludes my report. I'll be happy to answer questions.
Okay, I have a question. And this was a surprise to me, the part about the $1 million insurance policy. So the way I'm reading this, if you have in Del Mar Park a family reunion where you put up a little tent to cover the cake and you have 76 people come and you have beer, you have to do a policy for $1 million insurance? Is that correct?
Under the scenario that you just described, you are correct. Alcoholic beverages...
How much does that cost?
$1 million liability insurance is not as expensive as you might think. You have an option of purchasing it through the city or providing your own, provided it's a commercial policy. Generally, it depends on the number of people in the group, but you can range from $100 to $160, $170 per event. So the premiums are very reasonable. But the liability exposure is certainly transferred to the applicant once activities such as you've described are occurring.
And how would people even know about this? I mean, if we just decide, okay, we're going to have a party in Del Mar, do most people know to come and get a permit for something like that? Or do they just figure it's a public park?
By city ordinance and the conditions that I described, they have to. And you have to know that there's a policy and you have to get permits to use public areas. If you don't meet the criteria and you just want to reserve Del Mar Park, for example, first birthday party, 30 kids are coming or less, and you just want a reservation, you can do that. And you would still have to get a permit because that's the only vehicle we have for reservations. However, we would not mandate the insurance policy because you don't meet the criteria for a public area use permit.
Okay.
It's a smaller group. So all you're doing is reserving the park, but you're not obligated for the permit.
Mayor Peters, just a point of clarification. The parks are available.
We go until 4. We have about a half hour per event. We try to have the applicant there. It's been very successful in the past. And this month, obviously because of the holidays, we're going to postpone it. And we're going to have it this Thursday. And we'll probably review 3 or 4 of the upcoming events.
And how much time do you require in advance if people want a special event?
You know, we ask for a 10-day reservation, but we could process something within 5 days, provided our staff is available for support to get that accomplished, and providing the size of the event. Okay. Something like the triathlon that's coming up, they've been in for 8 months now.
And just a question regarding the general public access. Let's say you have a couple events at Del Mar. And you reserve 30% for one event and 40% for another, say. Do we have maximum space areas that we would give to people on a reservation basis? I'm concerned that is there ever a time when the general public's going to be locked out of the park because everybody's got it reserved?
No. You're never excluded from the park. All park use, whether an area may be used for exclusive use, but the park is never reserved for exclusive use. It's always open to the public. So if you were to reserve the grassy area at Thailand's Park, and we've had a couple of come in there, part of the conditions that staff puts on the application is that the park must remain open for all public use. Same with Lila Kaiser. If you reserve the fields, guess what? The rest of the park needs to remain open, as well the parking as well as the play area. So there's not exclusive use of the park, but there's exclusive use of a reservable area.
And then in page 5 on number 6. So if you have a group of, I don't know, 10 or 12 people, and one person there is drinking beer, and according to this, they need a permit. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. By city ordinance, alcohol consumption in public areas is forbidden, unless it's done by a permit. And that's where we come into. You've got to get the permit. You go through the process, and through our team, through public services, most likely the commander would be involved in that, and he and I would, or that person and I would go and review the event, where the alcohol is, how it's going to be consumed. We don't have too many of those smaller groups that do that, but when they do, they get the permit, and they have to get the insurance.
Thank you.
Other questions? Anybody?
I don't have a question. I have a concern or something that I'd like emphasized, and that is in the last section, 24-100, it talks about some sections that don't exist anymore. I think we can just change those to what they currently are. My guess is that what they should be is 24-70, 24-80, and 24-90. I went back and looked at this today in 1998 when they redid this code. It's like they took out the front section of Parks and Rec and they moved up the lower section, and so these numbers probably were overlooked and didn't get shifted, and so I think those need to be corrected.
I'd have to ask for city attorney's advice regarding the amendments of this ordinance at this time. Rob?
I mean, you certainly could, and we'd have to bring that back. The agenda item is dealing with the guidelines of the public area use permits. If you want to make changes to a municipal code, then they'd come back as amendments to the municipal code, first and second reading. These are from our exact municipal code.
So the guidelines are where in the staff report then?
The
public, are they just the 1 through 6?
The public use permit and the policies for use of public open space and equipments, page 8, 9, and 10. But that doesn't mean you couldn't direct us to, if there's changes that need to be made to our municipal code, we certainly could do that.
Yeah. Well, I think that needs a little correcting, so I'll put it on the future agenda item if that's all right. The only thing that I would then add to page 10 is on letter H, where it talks about trash containers. Can we say trash containers and recycle containers?
Yes, please.
Except we don't have recycled containers in our city parks.
That's correct. And that was the decision we've made several years back, adding recyclable receptacle next to a trash can is going to double the labor as far as maintaining that particular recycling container. So I've got to be able to have staff to empty it, maintain the receptacle, and also transport that recyclable. Now we have other sporting parks. Monty Young has a couple softball fields on the softball tennis courts. Pardon me. I'm hanging in there. Hold on. So, no, it doesn't just refer to the Kaiser, but Kaiser is the primary park that has the ball fields. Thank you.
Okay. It's real important that we start getting some recycled containers in our parks. You know, it's been 8 years since I've been on the council, and the first year I was on, I asked for them, and it still hasn't happened. And I talked to the IWMA about it, and they said we can get you some things that are similar to the ones that are used in San Luis that you put right on top. I think enough people go through that they would get the valuable things out, like the cans, but I guess I would throw it back to Parks and Rec Commission. We have got to do something about this. That's where all the recyclable containers are used for picnics and sports events, and it's a shame that we don't have that there.
Okay. I agree with you, and I was hoping that there would be an element on the public area use permit application that at least acknowledged the need for a recycling plan. I'm not sure if that's something that we could add there, but to make it clear that we expect parks users and public space users to recognize the recycling program, and that's something that we want to support. Is that possible?
That's certainly possible. It's been going on for a long time now. Part of our conditions is that every group, any public area use permit that's gone through the process, they have to recycle at least 50% of the refuse that's generated on site. They've got to adhere to our city's recycling plan, have recycling containers available. And as far as the furthest we go is with the Harbor Festival, that actually produces a report after their event that illustrates the amount of waste that's been recycled, generated and recycled. So it's on every program, every permit has conditions that deals with recycling. Though it's not on the application, is on every condition permit.
But I think the issues with the permitting is with the actual facility itself, the park itself. So maybe we can get Wrexham Park. Maybe we could ask Wrexham Park to brainstorm. Could we start with one park and figure out how to do recycling there, even if you just get Del Mar Elementary to, you know, adopt Del Mar Elementary Park, mm-hmm. Del Mar Park, and get them to do the recycling there, something like that.
That's what we're working on. That's the direction staff's been taking. We're expanding our Adopt a Park program. We'll be going into Kaiser next with the Teen Advisory Committee. So we are slowly getting there. It just takes a little bit of time and planning, and we've got a lot of plates in the air right now. So
okay.
We will get there.
So
it's definitely on our plan. No, I'm saying we definitely understand what you're saying, and we're moving in that direction.
Could it be as simple as, and I don't know, but could it be as simple as a couple of those wheeled containers at the smaller parks, that someone, all they'd have to do was just bring it out to the curb once a week, whoever adopted that park, just to have the container there available for use, and then someone to bring it to the curb on the pickup day. Is that a possibility?
It's a very good possibility. We utilize that program at our softball tournaments. We bring in the wheelies. They put them out for the tournament for the weekend. They're filled up, and then they're serviced by the Morro Bay Garbage Company. So it's something that we have introduced, but only in isolated and case-by-case basis.
I know for Del Mar it's a little hard because it's such a big park, but the smaller ones, it would seem that would be fairly simple. Okay, good.
As an interim option, Ms. Borchardt just brought it up. Like, for example, at Del Mar Park, instead of having, I believe it's a 3 or 4 yard dumpster there, to transition to a split dumpster. So even if we aren't offering recycling receptacles to the rest of the park at this point, there is at least the recycling elements at the dumpster point. Is that an option? The split?
I think it's a great option. We'll certainly look into it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Carla, do you have any comments?
Oh, yeah. I'm moving away from the parks because I think that was what I was asking for this about was, and I'm more interested in the rules for open space and public property use. And under that, C, it says, no use shall be granted in such manner to constitute a monopoly for benefit of person or organization. And so I guess the reason I had asked about this is what sparked all this for me months ago was the intent to move the farmers market down to the Embarcadero parking lot and the lack of requirement to notice any of the businesses or surrounding community. So that's what I want to know is how we address that in the future, because I feel that if we're closing a city parking lot or city property, the same as the street up there, the businesses in the surrounding community that are affected by it should be required to be noticed before that permit.
To satisfy public services. So they would have to have a condition that they would have the temporary use or special use permit to allow them to go more than five consecutive days or 10 accumulative days within the year.
So is that what the chamber currently has then, to close the street section of Main Street every Saturday for?
No, currently it was just a permit that's been processed through the public area use process and reviewed by all the city departments.
So So then in here, it also says groups conducting sales will be assessed a percentage of gross or flat fee, and that the businesses are required to have a business license. So who monitors that they have a business license? And are we just getting then a regular fee, the same as if you rent the park?
Are you still referring to the farmer's market?
Yeah, but it's on the street. It's still a street
right.
closure, parking lot closure, whatever.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. When we have vendors, and we do, and part of the conditions is that they get a transient vendor license, and that paperwork's processed through public services. And that's where the follow-up is. So if Art in the Park comes in, each vendor has to pay, you know, that day fee or that multiple day fee, and that's processed. And we don't see that money, but it goes over to the transient vendor licensing fund.
So what is the current permit fee then? I mean, permit process right now then to close that street every Saturday?
It's the same process that we described earlier. We've reviewed it. All the conditions are placed on the permit. Basically, it's when the streets can be closed, when they're notifying dispatch, when the street's closed, when it reopens, signage at the street, and so forth. I don't have it in front of me to review the conditions of that permit, but that's most of it.
So there's no appeal recourse for some, and I know the merchants want it there, but I'm just looking at this being the other side of the pendulum. There's no recourse if you don't want it there and you're a merchant or a homeowner or somebody to appeal it.
No, they can't. When public areas are not in use for recreational or city official business, they're open to the public for social, cultural activities. I can't say that one activity is better than the other, nor can anybody from the public. Because you don't like reggae music doesn't mean you can't have a reggae concert. I mean, music is music, and we have these festivals. We are, regardless of race, creed, and so forth, we don't discriminate against the activity. If the city facilities are available, and it's reasonable, and it's not detrimental to the public's health and well-being, then we should permit it and allow it to happen. Whether it's successful or not, it's up to the promoter.
I guess my concerns are not, again, for the individual events we have, like in our city parking lot for the music festival or something, but the ongoing, and the resolve has been fine with the farmer's market as it exists and where it is, but had it moved to the Embarcadero and the business is not, I guess my concern is that I want it changed before something like that would happen again, that businesses wouldn't be notified in advance and have some sort of hearing process to weigh in on the effect that that has. And,
well,
and it resolved itself, but it could come back.
I guess they could have a say at the public, at Recreation and Parks Commission's public comment time. We don't, these aren't public hearings as far as processing these permits. What you're talking about is a program that may last more than 5 consecutive days or more than 10, and we're saying that that might be a procedure that we would want to look into. And if I could ask Rob, maybe he could help me out here.
We did a little bit of research after Joe called me with your question, and it appears that our zoning code has that, well, it's not 100% clear of what it is, that it would go permits like this, these temporary type permits that are in the public's right-of-way for over these 5 consecutive days or 10 in a calendar year would need city administrative review and then be forwarded on to Planning Commission for review. I'm not sure. I don't have the history of the farmer's market where it is today. If that process was undertaken years ago when it was originally initiated or not. We're still doing that research and trying to determine what the intent of the applicability of that section of the code. And that's under our zoning ordinance.
I think the other thing to add is that since that occurred, and it was about the same time that Mr. Wood started formalizing his review committee, prior to that, there was no committee really to speak of that reviewed public area permits in general. It was... when I was the director, we didn't have a committee. When Mr. Woods came aboard, he felt it was very important to convene this committee, and it was a little bit, the attendance was a little bit haphazard in the beginning, but now...
Doors, they were closed, you've got people on both sides. Some of the merchants saying, yeah, it's great because I'm open and I get more people. Others saying, I don't get anybody when they're down there. Can there also perhaps be a review, maybe on an, if it's an ongoing every week thing, can we perhaps put in an annual review where perhaps it's open at Parks and Rec for people to come in and say, okay, I'm having a problem with this or something like that. Just before the Recreation and Parks Board is what I'm saying. I'm not asking a lot about a lot of staff time. But at least bring it up once a year so that people would have a chance to voice their concerns or support for continuing it. When it's a public street like that that affects other businesses, I think that might not be a bad idea because there's still some bad feelings down there.
Don't they have to, Madam Mayor, don't they have to, or Mr. Leivick maybe, or somebody renew their permit yearly for that?
That's correct.
And does that come before the Recreation and Parks Commission? No.
No, it's through the public area use permit process, although it may be required to go to Planning Commission.
Okay.
Looking at it from a zoning aspect now.
That's correct. Than,
yeah, which I would just think that this is different and should be handled that way versus the parks and things that...
Well, that's true. Yeah. You're right.
May I just add, Mayor, that through the process, one of the conditions that we would be reviewing if an event was to meet the criteria for a special use permit or a temporary use permit, that would be part of the conditions on the Recreation Parks public area use permit. And then mine would have a condition for him, and then they would get a permit through them. It would be a double permit, basically,
okay.
If you follow that one.
Other comments, anyone?
I'd like to press this point, if I could, on Mr. Woods. Could we, on the public area use permit, ask people to bring some kind of way to recycle their what they're bringing in if until the point where we can provide that for them? Is there some statement we could put on there that, you know, city encourages you to bring a recyclable container to haul out your recyclables?
We could add it to this. That shouldn't be a problem at all. We do add it to all the other the conditions of the permit,
yeah,
to include, you know, discouraging styrofoam and single-user mm-hmm. water bottles. We also include those for verbiage mm-hmm. as well. So we've taken your direction. We certainly can add it to the application itself.
Thanks.
All right. Any other comments, changes? All right, we're ready for a motion. So is there anything we're changing, or are we just going to go ahead with the directing staff to continue processing permits, allowing use of public property? Well, I guess with the current guidelines and the comments that we've made this evening. How's that?
With I think the only comments with the addition of some statement about recyclable
zoning.
And then the zoning to be examined
right.
otherwise.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any more discussion? I did. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay.
Now we could have a little break.
Would you like a little break? Okay, we'll take a little
Sorry.
Break. Okay. Okay, we're back. And item D3, which is the review of current procedures for amplified sound during events in parks. This is a park night, isn't it, Joe?
I believe so. Thank you, Mayor and Council. This item is brought to you by request. And this evening we want to review the current procedures and ordinances for the amplified sound during events in public parks. Public property is used by public groups and individuals for social, cultural, and recreational activities, as we stated earlier in the public area use permit process. And it's the same process as is used for this particular item. However, I won't belabor you with all the procedures for public area use permits, but I would add that the Municipal Code 9.28 to discuss which provides the guidelines for amplified noise in live music. These guidelines are incorporated in the conditions that we put on the public air use permit, same as the ones we've done for recycling, so forth. Typically, as stated in number one, live or amplified music during the event, during the event between the hours of 7 p.m. and 7 a.m. shall not be audible 50 feet from where the structure is located. And most of the events that have amplified sound are at Del Mar, Lila Kaiser Park, City Park. Coleman Park has been a popular venue. Their house and their residence and their driveway, and that worked out really well. And we've extended that on to other programs and asking applicants to go to the adjacent property owners, letting them know, hey, we're going to have a concert here next week. This is the date. This is the time. Just so they'll know what's happening. It's not for an appeal process, but it's more of a notification. And so permits allowing public use by public groups and public properties are heavily conditioned. Staff conditions these with the community's interest in the forefront. And to date, we have not received any pattern of complaints regarding amplified or live music in city parks. But we do address it anytime it's pertinent through the application process. That concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions regarding the item.
It seems to me that there were some complaints about amplified music in the Centennial Parkway from the businesses across the street. And has that been resolved?
Yes, there was a complaint 3 or 4 months ago, roughly on the timeline. I did address that issue with the business owners across the street. I personally went down there and met with them. I met with the applicant, and they agreed to modify their setup and their sound, and they assured me it wasn't going to happen again, and so far those conditions have been met, and things have been working rather smoothly. Right. When I said there was, I didn't mean there was no complaints, there was no pattern of complaints.
Yeah, no, but I'm glad to know that that has been resolved, because I remember that was an issue with a couple of people down there, so that's good. I'm
certainly
glad to hear that.
Thank you.
Questions?
Yeah, on page 2, the under discussion, the last paragraph, applicants are required to notify adjacent neighbors of their planned use prior to the event date. I live right by Del Mar Park, and I've never been bothered by the noise. As a matter of fact, I kind of like to hear it. But the infamous birthday party a few months back that we had the complaints on, and
sure.
In the 4 years that I've been on council, I've only had one person call me about it, but that was the one. So I guess my question is, when you're going to have amplified music, do you draw a circle and say, okay, you've got to notify these people in this area? And is there any check system, or do they acknowledge doing so after the fact in any way, or do you just leave them on their own and say, you got to take care of it, just do it? Or how does that work?
Pardon me, I came down with some cold over the weekend, so I've been a little tough in the throat. Notifying the adjacent property owners and residents is relatively new. And I won't disguise that. The fact that we don't have a perfected policy in place. We don't have something that's routine. But that's a goal of ours to get to. We know our parks aren't going anywhere, so using that as an anchor, we can outline our notified residents or our addresses, and then we'll either bullet them through the applicant or we can use the Notify Me on our website. So we're still kind of fumbling through the procedures. But we certainly think that notifying the residents of special events that have amplified music or alcohol or a combination, which is generally what it is important. It's important to the community. They know that we value what they're doing in the community, and we want to let them know what's going on. So we think it's important. We want to continue. We haven't perfected it yet, but I think we're going in the right direction.
I got the impression from what you said a minute ago that when you did the slalom downhill races, that was a procedure that you liked. And are you adopting that procedure then, or only on street events?
That particular event was unique in that it used the public roadway for the event, and it denied access to driveways. And generally that doesn't happen when the events are in the park. So the uniqueness of that really warranted more notification than a general program in the park would.
So it was more about access than noise?
Oh, definitely.
And Mr. Woods, did you say that you required them to show proof, evidence that they had contacted those affected?
We give them an example sheet, like a sign-in sheet, if you will. If you were to go to a class and you sign up for it, it's more of an acknowledgement, and then they would sign, and then before the event, they would turn that in to us.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah. My other question is just out of curiosity, which here on page 2, you cite some parks that have traditionally been the more popular for amplified sound, and which I was thinking that it would be nice to have the flexibility for events to happen later on the weekends, but thinking about it further and talking with Mr. Woods earlier, it's pretty clear that people really appreciate quiet and peacefulness in our neighborhoods, and right now it seems like we're pretty close to something that's working, so I'm comfortable with it as it is and appreciate Mr. Woods' proactive approach on talking with the neighborhoods and those involved.
Okay, go ahead.
I echo that.
Rick? Penny?
Ditto.
Oh, that was easy. You want to make a motion, Noah?
Sure. I move the City Council direct staff to continue processing permits allowing amplified sound during events in public parks using current guidelines, policies, and ordinances.
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. I just want to add something because it's come up in the last two items, and that's, Joe, I want to thank you for what you're doing within your department in getting all of this worked out and realizing where there are needs for a little more overview of things. And I really appreciate the work you're doing. It's bearing fruit. Appreciate that. All right. Now, on item D4, I'm going to have to step down because I have a potential conflict. This is a review of co-sponsorship request from the Morro Bay Garden Club for the Dahlia Days. I am paid by one event, and I have another event I represent that would like sponsorship. The paid one has sponsorship. That's enough of a conflict for me, so I'm going to turn it over to Carla as the vice mayor, and I'm going to exit the stage.
Carla, you got your whip ready?
No, my broom.
The belt, right?
My broom. This is Mr. Woods again.
Pardon me. Yes, it is. And thank you and good evening. This item is brought to you through the process of co-sponsorship. The request for co-sponsorship was made by the Dahlia Days, by the Morro Bay Garden Club, to host their annual Dahlia Days at the Morro Bay Community Center. They've applied for co-sponsorship last year. It was reviewed by council and denied, but after that denial, we developed procedures and policies that that outline co-sponsorships. And you remember the application process that we developed. It went to the Recreation Parks Commission. It came back to council for adoption. We put that policy in place. This is the first co-sponsorship application that's come through. Dahlia Days co-sponsorship was reviewed by the Recreation Parks Commission. The Recreation Parks Commission felt that, and the staff agrees, that two of the three criteria have been met, and that being that the event is, the requesting party is a nonprofit organization, that it's a multiple-day event or a single day with financial benefit to the city. But the third is the event off-season, which is defined as November the 1st through April the 30th. In this particular case, it is not. And as stated in public comment, that Dahlia Days is in August, and because dahlias bloom in August. So taking that into consideration, the Recreation and Parks Commission does support the co-sponsorship for the Morro Bay Garden Club for their annual Dahlia Days. scheduled for August 27th through the 28th, 2010, at the community center. And they're asking council to waive the third condition based on the uniqueness of the event. So without getting any details more of this particular request, I'd be happy to answer questions, but I have provided minutes for council's review regarding the discussions that we've had at the Recreation and Parks Commission, discussions that you've had in preparing the procedures for co-sponsorship. So they're out there. The Dahlia Days is entering. This is, if I can add a little bit more for them since they're not present, and it's not a public area use permit, that this is their fifth event. They took a major hiatus, I think, since 66, I think, till now. But it's good to see there's more renewed energy within this group, and they're wanting to bring this event back to Morro Bay. They do feel that it's a very positive event. It's good publicity for their particular club. It's good publicity for the city. It's Flower. You do sponsor the city's band, the White Caps band. Just as a reference, if you weren't knowing that they do use the Vets Hall.
An extra day, did they then up their fees that they have to pay to the city?
Definitely. Yes, additional days, additional hours are all calculated in the assessed fees.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Comments?
We've been given a lot of good reasons why maybe this event should be co-sponsored, but with a $500,000 shortfall, I'm not in any mood to co-sponsor really any events. I would be willing to do what I did last year, and I think what some of you joined me in doing was give a donation out of discretionary funds to help them. But, you know, this thing where some are and some aren't co-sponsored, I just don't like the unfairness of that. So that's where I'm at with it.
And I voted with you last year, thinking about it further and definitely seeing the continued evolution of this event, and I think the development of the event is really exciting. I'm comfortable with co-sponsorship at this point. I like that it's it's not a waiver that we will recoup our direct costs for staff time, and I'm certain that the Dahlia Days group will help keep a good, respectful presence at our community facilities. I'm not concerned about them trashing the place or creating more problems than you would expect. So at this point, I'm comfortable with the co-sponsorship. Because of the way that the event's focused and the Dahlia blooming, of course, in August, I'm willing to waive the one criteria about the time of year.
I would choose to be a stickler like Mr. Grantham and say you need to meet all three criteria, but you have presented convincing reasons this evening that they have tried to move to the middle and meet us halfway by expanding their event, so that now they do that. And certainly, or obviously, they can't change the date, so that becomes cumbersome for them. So I'm willing to do that this year and see how it goes. Are you asking for a permanent or just this year?
No, part of your process is an annual review.
Okay, great.
So they would have to re-up for the next event.
Thank you.
Well, I agree with both Ms. Winholtz and Mr. Smuckler's comments in the event. And I appreciate also that they've made an effort to include a lot of local organizations to participate with it too and really bring the spirit of the community into it as they're trying to grow the event. So I would certainly be willing to support the co-sponsorship so that we at least would just receive our fixed costs back. With that, no one else has comments, so I'll take a motion.
I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council support the co-sponsorship of the city and the Morro Bay Garden Club with their annual Dahlia Days event on August 27th, 28th, 2010 at the Morro Bay Community Center.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
3-1.
Thank you, Carla. All right. Next item, D5, we're going to have a couple of other people step down. This is a facility fee waiver for the candidate forum, and we have two candidates on the dais, so sort of musical chairs this evening. All right, this is something that Noah and I both brought up. We've had a request for a waiver of the fee for this building, the Vets Hall, for a candidate forum, and it's being sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce, the Business and Community Forum, and the Lions Club. And so we are considering whether we want to waive the fees for this three-hour event to be held on May 4th, 2010. Noah, did you want to add anything?
The only thing I would add is when I talked with Mr. Woods earlier, there were some questions that I wanted to make sure we were clear about, and those involved the responsibilities of which party, and I'd request that we have the applicant be responsible for insurance and liability, the cleanup and setup, and then the open up and lockdown of the event. I think that being said was the only thing that I thought we should clarify further out of the staff report.
Okay, and is there a cost for any of that, or?
Right,
a cost. Is there
for the applicant to come up with those three things: the insurance liability, cleanup, setup, and lockdown and open up. I don't believe there will be a cost, judging from the participants and the coalition that is the applicant. I think they'll be able to find an in-house insurance supplier through their groups.
Okay. All right. For the regular election. With the
condition.
Understanding that they supply the manpower,
the
insurance, and all of that, yeah.
So, second.
Okay. Any more discussion?
Well, I don't know. Mr. Grantham just didn't want to waive the fees because he was worried about recouping the cost. So, no one.
I have one clarification. Okay. That you talk about a second candidates forum. It's going to be based on these sponsoring agencies.
I believe it will, but whichever agencies it is, we would have the same requirements, I would think. You know, if it's Rotary and somebody else that wants to do it, we'd still require them to supply the insurance
now,
and do the cleanup and all.
What about in the sense, with the last election, there was multiple forums?
I think two's enough. Don't you? I mean, one for
just,
the primary and one for the, mm-hmm. the
just
general
in the case that there turns out to be multiple forums next round, do we want to be clear that there's a limit to the number that we would sponsor?
I don't know. Wait, how do you feel?
I'm not going to support waiving it for everybody who wants to hold a candidates forum because I think it, you know, and then maybe that comes to is this a special interest group because it's being done collectively with three organizations. I don't feel
right.
that way, but
right. Right.
I would just be concerned that we'd be setting a precedent, and we're not in a position, as Mr. Grantham stated, to be able to afford to give everything away. We're making an exception beyond the co-sponsorship.
Well, so maybe I should amend my motion to say that the second forum, if two of these three applicants at least are the same, how's that? Then we know it'll be a general one, not a special interest one.
Mayor Peters,
yes.
Can we suggest that if you have a second request for a fee waiver for the general election, that we just bring that back? I'm concerned about putting parameters on it
yeah.
at this point because we just don't know.
Okay.
But we'd certainly entertain bringing back a second request from any group. For
okay.
a fee waiver for the general election. That might be just easier and cleaner.
All right, I'll withdraw my motion, and I will make a motion that we approve a fee waiver for the three-hour event on May 4th with the applicants to meet the requirements as discussed.
And I will withdraw my second of the first motion and second this one. And I think you did say with the conditions. Okay, great. Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay.
Mayor Peters, we
yes.
will, though, as a staff, make sure that a group that comes forward knows that there is a precedent that's been set and encourage them, you know, encourage them to do a fee waiver.
Okay. All right. And then we move to item D7, now that we are all here again, and that's the Morro Bay Gibraltar Sister City Letter. And this is something that our advertising agent, John Sorgenfrey, brought forward. They are trying to form a sister city or twin city agreement with Gibraltar because the Rock of and Morro Rock. And so what they're looking for is sort of a co-promotion set up where we would have pictures of Gibraltar here and they would have pictures of Morro Bay there, and we would have trade agreements with our businesses and that sort of thing. So this is a letter to the mayor of Gibraltar, the mayor's assistant, and it is asking if Karen Biagini, who is going to be over there on a cruise on April 29th, could meet with them and give them some gifts from Morro Bay, talk a little bit more about what's involved. And I just wanted to have the council's approval to send this letter to the mayor of Gibraltar. Any questions?
No questions.
Okay. Then I'll move we approve the letter to be sent to Gibraltar about a sister city.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Look at that. We got through so fast, everybody. Future agenda items. Anybody have any?
I have one. I had the conversation with Mr. Wade earlier, and the idea is to bring back an item to have a discussion and potential action regarding a reclaimed water ordinance, and the focus would be on it'd be a long-term planning item, basically setting the groundwork and encouraging staff as they can to begin developing policy, procedure, and legal framework for a reclaimed water ordinance.
Okay.
Aren't we already doing that? Isn't that already part of the new guidelines moving forward?
This would be many cities adopt these reclaimed water ordinances ahead of when they'll have reclaimed water available. We don't have the strict requirements for the irrigation system type to be set up, the little purple rings that go on the sprinkler heads if you're going to have reclaimed water there in the future. So we would look to codify this so that we're ready to go when that time comes, that we will have
as we work through it.
Another example was priority uses and so on. These are things Dylan brought forward.
And you're not putting a time frame on this?
No, this is just to kind of push the ball a little bit. Yeah.
Add it to the list.
Yeah.
Okay. You have agreement. We want to add it to the list. What else? That was it? Carla, anything?
No.
Betty?
I have multiples.
Why am I not surprised?
Well, bringing the, sorry, Mr. Woods, in light of the two of the items that brought forward tonight, the Recreation and Parks Department and the prohibited conduct under both the municipal code, there's just some cleanup that needs to happen with language. And I don't mind doing that. I'd be glad to sit in with Mr. Schultz and we can just go through this, or Mr. Woods, and just clean it up. But what I'd really like to do on the prohibited conduct is add a violation section that's stronger, that's similar to when we have a dog issue in our neighborhood. If three neighbors agree, then Animal Reg comes out and deals with that household. When we have noise in the neighborhood or some kind of nuisance in the neighborhood, if three neighbors agree, I think we can look at some kind of code enforcement that's doable, that's apparently not doable right now because we don't have certain equipment. So that's my aim for that, the conduct one. And then just the Parks and Rec is, again, just language that needs cleaning up.
Okay, so what's the future agenda item? How do you want to word that?
I would assume they would have to be handled separately because they're two different codes, but it's to...
You're adding something to one and just cleaning up language
yes.
in the other. I don't know if the cleaning up language has to come back. Is that something that...
They're both ordinances. One is Ordinance 9, which is the noise ordinance, which is sitting out there needing to be reviewed because we're still on our future agenda item guide, so we can go over on when we can bring that and maybe sit down. And the other one's just clean up, kind of like maybe we can do that real quick, the cleanup one, because it can come with the attorney one that we're doing also. So, okay. I mean, it's just our two future agenda items are amendments to the Rec and Park Municipal Code Chapter 2 and the Noise Ordinance, which is Chapter 9,
which is already on the calendar. Okay. All right, so we all in agreement that we want to proceed with those as time permits as well. Okay.
Another agenda item I'd like is to have the discussion, and not just discussion, but action if possible, to pull our LCP out of the Coastal Commission and just start over or send these amendments up. But I'd like to pull that document out
so it becomes no longer controversial or us against them type of situation, and let us look at what we can do, take the next step. I don't think we have to take the next step, but I'd like to pull the documents back. And I'd like to have that discussion. I'm not asking us to decide right now, but to have the discussion of whether we should pull those documents.
Okay, is that a staff report required? That would have
no,
to be, right?
No, it's a policy decision.
Well, but there may be ramifications that we don't know about.
Well, I know, I'm sure Rob will add, but I do know that we're working with the Coastal Commission again on scheduling a meeting. We did have one scheduled, but it was for the day of our goal setting, so we had to cancel that. Mm-hmm. We have some dates up there now that we're waiting for them to come back, just for your information. Related.
Well, could we bring this item back after they've had that meeting and see if they can make any progress?
We could, but I think what it does is give direction to them when they go up to talk to the commission. You know,
oh, okay.
This may be one of the items, is that this is a direction that council wants. We want to pull our documents back. How can we approach this differently?
All right, so you'll write a report that we can talk
sure,
about.
Sure, I'll write the report.
Everybody in agreement with that one? Okay. Anything else?
Well, I want to talk about trees, but maybe not tonight.
Okay. Rick, did you have anything? No? Okay. All right. Then I have the closing quote. This is from George Orwell. During times of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes a revolutionary act. And with that, we're adjourned. Thank you.